never good to remember. That is, even if you just got the power of focus, we didn't have to make it a priority item. We had to be other items to priority. And if I recall, I was then approached by a conductor,
Nella Sadie, they will be joining us. And Nella Trading had been a contractor of Vodafone for more than 6 years. It is a black-owned company that provides services in a telecommunication space.
And it does a maintenance and related work. And then, at some point, Vodacom subcontracted the management of those contracts to Ericsson, South Africa. And this company was then one of the contractors that fell under the management of contracts that were now managed by Ericsson. And in a time less than 10 months, that happened. Ericsson then continued the contract, terminated the contract, without explaining to this black subcontractor the reason for the termination of the contract. But also Ericsson did not pay this contractor for 4 months. And even after having terminated the contract, they only paid them for 1 month. When the issue was presented to me, I then contacted Ericsson to try and get to the Ericsson side of the story. And because I was on sick leave, I was not here in Parliament. I used to this garden to write an email to Ericsson. And I used my Gmail domain, which is synchronous to my parliamentary domain. And Ericsson responded by saying that it didn't look like it was an official letter because coming from Chesterton, although I had explained that I was a teacher. I then had to instruct my secretary, executive secretary, to resend the letter using a letterhead of my office to prove that I am actually the chairperson of the portfolio committee in Parliament. After that, Ericsson raised an issue of a confidentiality clause between themselves and the contractor, which then presented them, they said that contractor had violated that confidentiality clause by coming, by approaching the portfolio committee. I had to then write again to Ericsson to make them aware that in terms of the South African Constitution, Parliament is empowered to seek information from any person. And if Ericsson was not going to voluntarily we share that information. The Constitution again empowers Parliament to summon any one and any entity to come to Parliament if an information is needed. So this meeting then is about what sparked by that issue. I then asked the committee secretary to shift the agenda item that we were supposed to have dealt with this week and put this matter forward. And the reason for that was when this contractor came to me, the contract had not yet been terminated. There was still a letter of intention to do that. And I thought that if the way discussing, we were hearing the Ericsson side of the story, maybe that situation would have been better understood. It is not the first time that I would meet with entities out of the parliamentary process. And also members of the public. We do, as members of parliament, meet with people because we are public representatives. We don't only meet with them here in parliament. And members of the public are also allowed to come to us to raise their issues, even in our homes and in our constituency offices. So I was not offline when I was doing that. There are many, many issues that are brought up, emails that are sent that I would respond to them using this gadget. But what also disturbed me, from the manner in which Ericsson responded, is that I was dealing with a telecommunications company, which is in the telecommunications space. It is not us who designed these gadgets. And it is the telecommunication company. In the past, I would not use a cell phone to fax. In the past, I would not use a cell phone to receive and send an email. It is the telecommunication company that has done that. And when I am then using it, I am questioned by the very same company that designed those gadgets, and my appreciation for such an initiative by telecommunication company was that they were making us to be easily accessible even if we are not in the offices, and also to respond quickly to issues that have been raised to us. So this meeting then is about that issue. Nela Trading is not the first company that has approached a committee, a portfolio committee. Many companies and individuals would come to us when they don't find joy in the space that they operate on. And we then look at their issues in line with the policies of government, so that we don't engage in issues that are not actually in line with the community. So Nela Trading is from Port Jefferson. Port Jefferson is under the Hydeska Coast Municipality. And Hydeska Coast is one of the local municipalities under Ogu District Municipality, a presidential poverty node, which means it is an area that has got high rate of unemployment and poverty. So, as a black contractor from that area, whole contract is continued would mean that there are people that are going to lose jobs. So it is in that context then that this meeting is called. Because one of the goals of this government is to ensure that economy is transformed in South Africa to give the previously disadvantaged people of this country an opportunity to enter the space, the mainstream economy. So if a black contractor is having a problem of the contract that is being terminated and then replaced with a white contractor, it raises a lot of questions in terms of where, which direction the country is taking. So it is in that context that we are having this meeting. We will then start by taking the apologies and then get to the actual agenda item that we invited Vodacom and everything to discuss and enlighten the portfolio committee on. Are there any apologies?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, colleagues. And good morning, different companies. Chairperson, may I tender the apology of Honorable Mlawuzi, who said he is committed in the headquarters. And then I also receive the apology of the minister who is attending the cabinet meeting. And then also receive the apology of the Director General of the Department by the name of Professor Chris, whereby we received a letter informing us that she is bereaved, she has lost her son. So those are the three approaches that we received. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. We have
thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to you, honorable members, Eric Steen and Vodacom. It's not an apology, Chair, but it's a request to be excused at 1 o'clock. I'm joining the study for the tourism.
Chairperson, again, greetings to everybody in the meeting. I ask him to leave the meeting because of ill health challenges.
Thank you, sir, and good morning, sir, and everybody. I ask him to leave by 15 because I had an appointment with the doctor. If I release air on, then I'll come back to the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before we continue with our meeting, can we then stand up and observe a moment of silence for the passing on of the people's hands? May his soul rest in peace.
And rise in glory.
Thank you. Thank you. We then give an opportunity to welcome and after the team leader to introduce the the delegation and then take us through the presentation.
Thank you. Whilst my colleague is just collecting, I just wanted to put an apology for our CEO, Mr. Shamir Yusuf. He is out of country in Tanzania, but we felt that because of the importance of this discussion and also the impact of the small and medium enterprises to the life of Volcom, we will have to be here. I will just want my colleagues quickly to stand up and introduce themselves here so that everybody has the chance to speak one by one quickly. But also, Chair, I just want to indicate that there is a presentation that the honorable members are having. But also because of the time, my colleague will give us a summary of that presentation, making sure that at least to take everybody on board. Linda Martinez will lead us in that discussion. She's just connecting it. So that the questions that you have, you can ask them, honorable members, on the presentation that you have, but we'll just give you a summary of that discussion so that we don't take a lot of your time. I'll be asking my colleagues quickly just to stand up, Shepherdson, through you, honorable chair, to introduce themselves quickly so that everyone knows who's representing Vodacom here. I am Tem Bakinana. I'm a group executive for the government relations for Vodacom.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Chair Laha. My name is Linda Martinez. I'm executive head of BEE and transformation for the entire Vodacom group of companies.
Okay, my name is Ayub Kubati. I'm the executive head for managed services and national network properties.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. That's a team, honorable members, to your Chair. And we felt that we'll have to bring in, ensuring that whatever questions that I mentioned, we are able to make sure that we take the honorable members through. Linda, are you in?
Yes, I am.
Good morning again, huh? Chair, in terms of the presentation, this is in accordance to your official letter sent to Shamir Yusuf, within which you inquired about our retail transformation plan. What we are doing, obviously, in terms of SMME, the development, the early payment terms. So the presentation has been crafted in that particular manner. Obviously, my team is here to support on any other questions that the House may have. So to proceed. Okay. We all know that Vodacom started on the 1st of June 1994. It was one of the first companies that commenced trading post the election of 27 April 1994. And at the time, the one commitment Vodacom made to government was that we were going to walk hand in hand to ensure that government achieves the transformation process originally under the RDP program. Within our first 3 years of trading, Vodacom committed over R1 billion in investment to ensuring the development and the growth of rural areas and communities. Our philosophy from 1994 has always been that because Vodacom was a truly SA-owned company, 100%, that Vodacom's emphasis was to empower every citizen in the country. So our SME development program commenced in September 1994. And what we saw come out of that was between September 1994 and 2002, over 3,000 small, medium-sized businesses being formed that generated revenue to them of in excess of 100 million rand a month. Over time, in 2000, we then realized that our regional retail channel, which commenced in 1994, needed to actually start reflecting the demographics of the country. So our MD at the time, Jamil Joseph of Vodacom SA, made a call and insisted that every new retail channel that was going to be opened at least had 50% black equity in it. The commencement of BE in 2007 allowed Vodacom to obviously gain recognition for the transformation programs Vodacom implemented since 1994. In terms of our economic transformation policy, we do not and will not ever treat it as a standalone big box policy. The way that I've crafted transformation in the Vodacom group and the entire Vodacom group of companies is that transformation, economic transformation of this nation will be interwoven into the very fabric of our overarching business strategy. And to this end, nowhere in my entire organization of over 5,000 employees, of which 70% of them are black and 48% black female, will you see being as a standalone entity. Obviously, this slide shows the path of Vodacom's existence from the time when we were granted our license on the 27th of October 1993 to this point. For me, the fundamental essence is what we have actually done for the own country. The perception is obviously that when one looks at, for example, any other network, the perception is that the way we are viewed is we may not be seen to be actually doing much. One of the reasons for that is because I don't believe that we should be bragging in the press. I believe people should be actually feeling us. So when one looks at what we have done in BD, and in particularly my financial period 2015-16, which I am particularly proud of, during this period, and currently Vodacom scored and holds an impressive BE score of 98.25 points out of 109 total points, including bonus. Fundamentally, what we are shy in the ownership element, and we are effective changes to it, you will notice that our management, our board, scores 100 points. The reason being is that 75% of Vodacom Beauty One Limited's board is black. 58% is black female. The second most fundamental part of our transformation process is the development of urban fields. In the ICT sector, the one thing that one has noted is that for over 100 years, the ICT sector has been very male-dominant. It's been exceptionally white-dominant. And one reason that we felt necessary, and it has been Vodacom's passion since 1994, is to make sure that we equipped our employees with the core critical skills necessary to actually drive the ICT sector strongly, not only in this country, but throughout Africa. In that instance, we invested over 112 million rand on skills training programs for black employees in one financial year. That is 14 million rand more than the target that was asked on us. Our next area, the supply chain management, is where we believe that we drive transformation through our partners. This we have been aggressive on. Obviously, in the ICT sector, my hat goes off to Telkom. Their program ran from 2000, and the ICT sector code took Telkom's model, because the one focus Telkom's model had in that day was that it had this massive focus on small businesses, and particularly small black businesses. So in the ICT sector, we then embraced that, and what you will see is that of the 26 billion rand that is invested to BE status companies, of which 87% of those companies hold a BE status exceeding a level 4, excuse me, 51% black-owned companies, where the target in the code was 2.8 billion rand. Vodacom invested 7.2 billion rand towards those entities. Principally, and for me more importantly, and where my passion lies, is in terms of the suppliers that are female-owned. And in that instance, the target that was set for us was 1.3 billion. We exceeded that to a total of 5 billion rand. Within the process and the development of SMEs, which, as I said, we commenced in 1994, we invested in the capacity building of these entities at a cost of 841 million rand last financial period. Within that, over almost 300 million rand was paid within 3 days of invoice to SMEs. So what is our SME program all about? Our program is basically to develop. And in the development part is where we our investment over 841 million lines. Support. How do we do that? Your support, your best support as a corporate, is to make sure that SME businesses are financially able to actually thrive. The best way is through early payment terms. Well, I note, Chair, that in your letter you had reference to the 30-day payment terms. It's important that I actually note here that in terms of the ICT sector code, the requirement on us is 15 days payment term, of which Vodacom averages a 3-day payment period. Because no business, no small business can survive if they don't have finances. And thirdly is engagement. And this is within the entire spectrum of our business. As a very large corporate, over 240 billion rand business, one of the driving forces is obviously curbing OPEX costs. And what we did was, instead of consolidating necessary our entire supply chain management, within our regional focus, we are unbundled so that we make sure we can bring on as many like suppliers, particularly black-owned entities, EEs, QEDs. These are companies with annual turnover of between 0 and 50 million, with a very, very strong focus on black female equity owners. Over and above what is in the code, and it draws down to Vodacom's philosophy, which in 1994 was, we would never ever do anything for the mere letter of a law, but in the true spirit of it. So what we engaged in, and although we don't get any credit from a BE transformation angle, that's not where the essence is. We believe that in terms of government's policy to develop co-ops throughout our now known provinces, that this was an opportunity that Vodacom could actually get involved in. So So what we did was we requested a supplier who is island-based to firstly come and invest in the new country. Mace joined, Mace opened doors in our country about 4 years ago. This entity handles all of Vodacom's branding, our t-shirts, our tracksuits, and any of that apparel. And then we started engaging them with how could we get their skill transferred to our own people. In collaboration with DTI and with MACE, we then started a co-op where we have three of these already up and running, 100% driven by women, where we provide them not only with the skill in terms of stitching and labeling, but also business acumen skill set. Okay, that endorsement we received from DTI last year is a co-partnership funding model between DTI, Mace, and Vodacom. And in essence, instead of us shipping our t-shirts to China to be embroidered, our t-shirts are now being done here locally by black female-owned co-op ops in rural areas. Our aim is to have co-ops in every province and to expand it beyond just the apparel process. As I mentioned earlier, our other passion is obviously skills. For us, skills is very important in the SME space. Over the last 10 years, the one thing that we noticed dealing with SMEs was not the inability to develop a product, but the inability to actually market it, to understand the financial models, probably, or to develop strong, like, financial models. So what we have done is we have currently incubated training centers in 5 provinces, as well as a collaboration with GIPS. Our GIPS program is, again, specific to black females, my very strong passion. I think I've overstated it, but I can't state it enough. Where we actually take black-owned, female-owned ICT SME companies and put them through very stringent high-level business training. At the moment, we have 53 SMEs in these training programs. One of them recently was awarded the top entrepreneur award in the Gauteng province. And another one of our SMEs attended the Davos Youth Program in Israel. About 53% of our businesses in the collective form is female-owned. About 48% is youth-owned. But the sole focus is developing in the ICT sector, barring the broadcasting sector. So it's very IT telco type based instead of in film and media. Moving on to the issue that the chair raised in the letter around what are we doing in our retail franchise space. Currently, as I said, since 2000, we've been having a very, trying to have a very strong focus of bringing more and more black owners into the space. At the moment, of our 205 Vodacom stores, 63 of that is 100% black owned. 7 of that are greater than 50% black owned. 35 of that is white, because it's important that we actually show the split out between black and white. And then we have 80 that are what I would call hybrid models. These are where there is a co-equity partnership, a 50-50 split out between white and black. In our the express stores, on the other hand, of our 13 stores that we have in place at the moment, 12 rats is 100% black and one is 100% white. Going forward, our board approved a transformation of our retail process, and this is our retail segment that commenced in 1994. Obviously, the details of that chair, unfortunately, is still being worked out, and a lot of the finer details still need board approval. But what the board has asked of us is that we reshape and change the profile of some of our stores. So for this year, we're looking at a transformation of 24 stores out of 45 in the larger. We're not looking at just our franchise. We're looking at our larger stores in that instance. The preference here, obviously, is 100% black, at least more than 50% black female owned, or in cases where we can, a 51% female equity holding. Looking obviously at our commitment through our supply chain management, I thought it was important that I gave you a 5-year view so that you could see that our commitment is not a once-off, or our result is not a once-off happy 12-month period. You will notice that, and I'm going to draw your attention particularly to the spend growth and development in the greater 51% black-owned suppliers and greater 50% black owned. In the greater 51% black-owned, we moved from 934 million rand investment to 7 billion in a 5-year period. Importantly, on the greater 30% black-owned suppliers, which in the ICT sector, and especially in the Vodacom instance, where the bulk of our spend is on high core technical equipment that was previously and majority imported from foreign entities, we've managed to move spend from 235 million in financial year 12 to 5 billion in financial year 15-16. The early payment terms, the ICT sector code kicked in the 12th of June 2012. So in that instance, our measurement was then done, and there we measured from 96 million up to 234 million. Now, importantly, what we also did was that we have a dedicated finance team that only serves the SMEs. The conflict here, and you might ask and say to me, but little, why is that number low? The bottom line is that there is a conflict in our legislative tools. The ICT sector code and BEE measures arguably an SME as an EME or a QSE, meaning a legal entity, a business entity, with an annual turnover of between 0 and 50 million. However, the National Small Business Act, last amended in 1998, reserves a threshold value for the ICT sector as of an SME up to 20 million. Now, when one looks at the fact that BE expands that to 50 billion, arguably what we would like to see is the alignment between the National Small Business Act threshold and those in the BE code, because then we will actually see a far greater impact, a far meaningful impact, if we get that legislative alignment. Okay, I've covered that, and I think based on all of that, I thank you, Jay.
Presentation, Chair, and we thought that, as my colleague has indicated, Chair,
that we want to go through all the questions that were raised in the letter by the chairperson, and the team chairperson is available to engage on the question that honourable members that are having. And also, as they indicated at the beginning, to us as well, this is just the beginning, and we think that we'll be engaging with the Buffalo community continuously from May, and we're available at any time in making sure that in our CEO one day is here and engage with the Buffalo community. Thank you very much, Linda.
Thank you very much. I don't see that you're here for our meeting. Continue with the agenda and take the presentation by Erickson.
Honourable members, members of the Portfolio Committee, thanks for providing us with the opportunity to present the Edmonton transformation we've been undergoing, as well as where we are with small business development, and also in particularly what we prepared was the presentation in accordance with the letter we received on the 25th of July. So, just to present ourselves, basically, my name is Mohamed Issof. I'm country manager for South Africa, and I'm also head of legal for region sub-Saharan Africa. Who else we have in our panel? Ishalesi Makapani. He is our government and industry relations. He is also heading the function for region sub-Saharan Africa. Then we've got Esther Bovender. He is our head of sourcing. He also holds the title of head of sourcing for sub-Saharan Africa. Then we got Charlotte Mwaki. She is our transformation manager, specifically on broad-based black economic empowerment, on which we engage quite vigorously. If I may be allowed to continue. So in terms of the agenda, what we will do is provide just a brief introduction to Erickson so you have just a bit of an idea of Erickson. What we will do is we'll take the economic transformation slide later, but I think what we'll do is just offer a bit of insight into what we're doing from a sustainability, corporate responsibility, and also ICT empowerment in the whole of Africa. And then the governor will take us through the specific questions and also just our policies and what we're doing in terms of the sort of questions that were raised. Just a bit of our organization. We are one of 10 regions in Ericsson Group, and we occupy the region sub-Saharan Africa. In this region, we have 43 countries. We've got 30 establishments. We've been kind of present in these territories for some time. In South Africa, we've kind of been in around since 1896. Ever since that time, being a sort of Swedish company, we've always engaged in transformation. We've always engaged in a lot of activity from a social corporate responsibility perspective. Just a bit about how we present and where we're located. Our head office is in South Africa, and we have co-location offices in South Africa, in Cape Town, Port Elizabeth, Mpumalanga, Bloemfontein, Polokwane, Nelspruit, Pretoria, and Midrand. With that, Madam Chair, I'll hand over to Gillette Makapani, who will take us through the Ericsson South Africa sort of business and also our core business. And he'll take us through ICT empowerment in Africa, and he'll take up through the social economic, the social economic responsibility and corporate responsibility that we involve. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mohammed. Thank you very much, Madam Chair and honorable members. I had a slide you see before you. I'll not go through each and every line, but it just gives you a perspective of what Ericsson is involved in.
Could you please switch up the other slide?
So on the left hand side, it does give you the kind of line of business that we are involved in, things that we are doing across the continent and in South Africa as well. And then on the right hand side, it gives a perspective of what we are also working on towards in the future. We know that the ICT is driving other sectors, and we are now playing in that space to be able to look on how we can facilitate ICT transformation in those different sectors. And then why that is important, obviously, that as we enter into those areas, that's where we start to play those roles, also working with the other SME that comes on board, and my colleague Esther will come into that. And the last I can highlight that is that we're also working on creating innovation networks. There we have got some companies just to quote in South Africa, we're doing in our countries as well. In South Africa we've got a company that we have graduated from the Innovation Hub, and then today is a company that is developing an app that will be much more obviously available to be used in the continent as well. We are plugging it into our global research, where the app could become a very global product that has been developed out of here. So we're really excited to be able to see on how some of the companies are coming up with using on that. Next slide. My next slide, I just wanted to highlight, as a company, we believe in doing business responsibly, and we do get our employees to sign a business code of ethics every year in terms of how we want them to do business. And then the other thing as well is that we are really working hard in terms of making sure that we support education and then also other areas of social responsibility. We've got some problems in South Africa and also in the continent that we're dealing with. Okay. And finally, what I just wanted to highlight is that as a business, we very strongly believe that doing business and policy works hand in hand. And I think as a global company, in my role, is working with the different bodies from the African Union right across into the different countries. You can see the various regional bodies that we interact with to make sure that they understand where the technology is going, they understand what we are developing into the technology, and then from there they can be able to make alignment of the policies so that we can be able to create a win-win as we deploy technology. So that is that in my... on my side, and I will then head over to my colleague Esther that will then deal with the specific issue that was raised.
Thank you, Shaletsi. Honorable Chair and members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity. We thought it would be pertinent for us to just explain how we look at our SWI selection process and also what criteria we use for the selection of our suppliers. This is across the spectrum of suppliers that we use, and this is not restricted to looking at just BEE suppliers. To start with, we have an RFI, and I think that the most pertinent issues that we assess as regards an RFI are a request for the information. We look then at the capability and the experience of companies that are invited into the RFI process. We also have then a process where we look at what capacity and what tools they have. In many instances, particularly in our industry, there's a requirement for specific tools that is unique to the mobile telecommunications industry. One of the areas that we paid more and more attention to over the last couple of years at Ericsson is to look at the BEE compliance for companies that operate within Ericsson South Africa. The selection criterion for BEE currently does not necessarily apply in other countries. However, what we do in all countries across Africa is that we ensure that there is a significant local content of both skills and also technology. We assist those companies, not just in South Africa, but elsewhere as far as training is concerned. We then also look at the business finance. I think it has been mentioned, and we will continue to mention it, the sustainability of the different companies that we select has to be sound and support their sustainability, and also to ensure that there is continuity with the services that they provide, not just us as an Ericsson, but also other organizations within the ICT industry. We look at the project organization and the management. In many instances, we find that the skills at the low levels of the organizations are evident and are assessed and are good, but because of poor management, many of the companies fail. So that assessment is really quite important to us as we look at the financial health of the respective organizations. Experience in business, of course, and quality. What has been their past performance either with us as an Ericsson or their past performance with other organizations within the ICT industry. So there's an assessment of that. And then occupational health and safety. In an industry again such as ours and other industries outside of the ICT sector, occupational health and safety is becoming increasingly more important, not just for the safety of the equipment that they deal with, and not just the safety of the people that are working on this equipment, but for the public at large. In many instances, we find that we work in the public domain. If you look at the towers that are all around us, in most cities in Africa and across the world, Ericsson is responsible in many of those instances, in many of those cases, for the erection and the maintenance of those towers and the equipment that sits on those towers. That is step one. The next step that we go into is really to make a decision. What is the decision really based on? It's based on understanding the information that has been sent through to us. We assess that information. We then go through a short listing of suppliers that meet the scope of work and the quality requirements as expressed to you earlier on. We shortlist those particular suppliers and we go into the RFQ process. The RFQ process is really where it comes into the commercials. The commercials namely would be what is the target pricing that we would set for a specific scope of work. We then go out on an RFQ to shortlist suppliers, ask them to come into our process, and then we go through a further shortlisting. Ericsson has got a global process which is not necessarily run exclusively in South Africa, but it is also run on a global basis, which is the e-auction and the reverse e-auction processes that we have. This is adjudicated not just with South Africa or with people that are resident in our region, which is sub-Saharan Africa, but there's an independent global team that is part of this process. The reason for us having to do this is that there is no human interference when we go to the final selection process of the shortage of suppliers. Through the e-auction process, we look at the price, and we look at the evaluation. Now, how do we set the pricing and how do we set the targeting? Is that we set it in such a way that it is market-related, it's equitable, and we look at what prices comes in from our supplier community to ensure that they are fair. We then go into the negotiations, which is now having a face-to-face meeting with suppliers that have been shortlisted and have gone through the e-auction process and have been evaluated by us. We bring that into the negotiation process. That process will be face-to-face. In the main, that process is to understand whether there is a sound, not just understanding, but that the scope of work that we have defined is clearly understood by the supplier themselves. We have found in many instances that because of the verbiage that's in either our documentation or theirs, there could be a lack of understanding, and we do not want to disqualify suppliers on the basis of the fact that they don't understand our scope. In some instances, what does happen is that they will quote us in such a way that the prices are not market related. They could be either far too high or far too low. So in order to give them a fair opportunity to engage with us and become a part of our supply base, we go through the process of negotiations with a face-to-face, clarifying what the scope of work is. Understandably, in this audience and outside of here, that in some instances the complexity of work that needs to be undertaken is underestimated, particularly by some of our suppliers. We have a very, very large complex scope of work in some instances, and it really requires us to go into clarity between the parties concerned. Once the process has been finalized and prices accepted by both parties, we then go through the award process. We thought it was relevant that we demonstrate how Ericsson goes through the supply selection process, not just looking at BE exclusively.
on the next slide, and I'm not going to go through this in great detail, but this is the supplier criterion and the manner in which we score our suppliers. All of our suppliers are scored on these parameters. First of all, we have a specific classification. Excuse me, I have a frog in my throat and it appears every now and then, so forgive me for that. We rate classify our suppliers as preferred, approved, and ones that are under observation. And what this really means is that if you preferred, it means that you've worked for Ericsson before, we've accredited you, you've gone through all the criteria, you then stay on our preferred list. So as opportunities arise, we then will invite you back into the RFI and the RFX, the entire RFX process. What do we then look at? We look at the agreement status, the company management, trade compliance, intellectual property rights, financial status of the companies, business continuity management, the code of conduct, the environment, quality management and system and gender issues, which will really look at what sort of quality assurance processes and programs do the respective companies have. We look at their sourcing processes, how do they source? Are the transparent ways in which they source and they need to make it available to us? We look at security, DEE, the product. It's also based on the quality of product and the type of product to see whether it meets our requirements. The production capabilities, how do they go through their claim processes, the supply. And then we look at, if it's an R&D related company, we look at time to market, which is the TTM. What time to market are they going to take? And then finally, we also look at the TTC, which is really looking at the time to complete a specific task, and then business flexibility and cost. That gives you an indication of what processes we go through as we begin to select, and how do we then score different suppliers. And this applies to our entire supply base. The next slide showed you then the summary of suppliers having to home adjust on the search, just in the South African context. In the South African context, we give an indication of how we progress over the last 3 years in terms of the number of suppliers that we have and how many of them are SMEs. The total number of suppliers we had in 2014 in South Africa was 80. In 2015, it increased to 171. And our forecast estimate for 2016 will be 198 suppliers. The reason for the incremental number of suppliers is based purely on the contracts that Ericsson gets awarded in South Africa and in other countries. So in South Africa over the last 2 years, we were awarded more contracts by our respective customers, and hence the increase in terms of our supply base. The total number of SMEs that we had, in 2014 there were 49, in 2015 we had 82, and it's now gone up to 95. That is the final year-end projection that we have, that there would be 95. To break it down further, the number of suppliers that are greater than 50%, why we say greater than 50% is still based on the old codes, is we had 32 in 2014, 38 then in 2015, and we have 56 right now. And the numbers of those suppliers that are greater than 30%, with greater than 30% black ownership, 9 in 2014, 18 in 2015, and 24 is what we forecast and to end of the 2016 year with. The spend then on SMEs is in 2014 we were quite dismal. It was just on 2 million. In 2015 it's 327 million and we forecast that at the end of this year our spend on SMEs will be 420 million. And that spend then broken down further into looking at the 50% black ownership. Once again, 53 in 2014, 187 in 2015, and 261. This is the rent value that we're talking about, in millions. The spend with suppliers was 30% black ownership. 2015 was 30 million, 137 in 2015, which are actual numbers, and the projected for this year will be 300 million. That shows you what investments that we have made and the manner in which we have increased
the taking on and the engagement of SMMEs. On the next chart, to give an indication, throughout our region, which is sub-Saharan Africa, our total spend in rand denomination is with suppliers is approximately 4 billion. So we spend about 4 billion rand per annum on our total 3PP supplier base. To give you an indication then, within South Africa, our total procured spend is in the region of 873 million, with a total supply base of 171. That then broken down, with local suppliers, that was one of the questions that were posed to us, to break down what is the local spend and what is the foreign spend. Our local spend is 98% of the total spend, which equates to 838 million. That is what we spend locally. That is the mix of traditionally white suppliers and also looking then at the SMME sector. And there's just 2% of that, which is 14 million, that is direct spend with foreign companies that are based in South Africa or have presence in South Africa in one form or the other. To then break down further what we look at where, as far as local suppliers is concerned, is that those suppliers that are BEE compliant, irrespective of what rating they sit on, 97% of the total spend that we have goes through to BEE compliant companies, and it's to the value of 854 million. And evidently, we could see that 3 million of our total spend then goes towards non-compliant BEE companies that are in South Africa, based in South Africa, and non-compliant. So they are traditionally white-owned companies. To break down further then what is our spend on BEE compliant companies, those companies, excuse me, we have 83 companies of the 171, where the total procured spend were companies with black ownership. Some of the companies that we have spent on that are SMEs do not have black ownership in them, so we've broken that down even further, looking at what is the role that do have black ownership within the ownership ranks. That's 620 million, which is 71% of our total local spend. If we then have a look at the SMEs, the total spend from the SMEs, we have 82 of those, and that is 327 million, which comprises 37% of our total spend. That then broken further down, if you look at the 620 million, the total procure spend with black-owned companies, that's greater than 51% black-owned and greater than 30% black woman-owned, it's 324 million per annum. This is for the period 2015. These are actual numbers, which is 37%. Black-owned companies, 38 of the 171, which is 187 million, which is 21%. And black woman-owned, greater than 30%, 137 million at 16%. Then the total procured spend from the EMEs, if we just look at the total SME spend, on EMEs it's 57 million with 31%, and then on QSEs 270 million which equates to 7%. This gives you a picture of the actuals that you have and what our performance has been in 2015. So these are actuals for 2015. The next slide, without going into great detail, this is the year-to-date. So you find that our figures here are all year-to-date figures. And year-to-date, that this calculation was done was as at the end of July. So it gives you an indication of the different percentages, the different percentages and values as at the end of July. So as at the end of July, our total spend was 782 million. I will just go through the percentages here. If there's any questions, we'll definitely take those at a later stage. But the local spend on all South African companies was 96%. Foreign companies was 4%. The BEE compliant companies, 95% of their total spend. Non-compliance was just 1%, so that has decreased year on year. 478 million then went to spend with companies with black ownership in them, and that equated to 70%. On SMMEs, 245 million, and that was 36%. And that then broken down further, as we had done earlier, looking at the actuals for 2015. 51% was black owned, and greater than 30% black women owned was 48% in total, equating to a value of 326 million. This is the effect. We still have another 6 months for us to report on. And we certainly envisage that these numbers will be much higher, because our spend right now with the different contracts that we have in South Africa, the spend has increased. When we get awarded a specific contract, it takes a while before the spend really comes to our system. We then break down the spend and look at the total number of suppliers that we have. First of all, the total number of suppliers in South Africa has increased from 2014, from a number of 18 to 198 in 2016, for reasons that I've already articulated. We have more contracts now in South Africa, hence our supply base has increased. Our total procurement spend, this is the 2016 estimate, looking at approximately 1.2 billion, rising from 128 million. That was in 2014. The next looks at our spend on SMMEs on an aggregated level. And in 2016, we have 95 of our 198 suppliers. That's, excuse me, 95 of the 198 suppliers that are SMMEs. The BEE status differs from one company to the other there. But more importantly is to look at the spend that we have on the QSCs and the EMEs. In 2014, the spend was 2 million. Currently, our spend, our total estimated spend, which we have now forecasted for 2016, will be 420 million. And that is then 36% of the total. On the next, it looks at the supplier spend then, breaking them back down even further, looking at black-owned companies, where there is black ownership within the organizations. 46 of the 198 have some form of black ownership in them, and that varies from one company to the other, and it's 23%. So, looking at the history, 2014 at 32, 2015 at 38, and then 2016 at 46 million. The spend then with suppliers that are greater than 50% black owned, 2014 was 53, 2015 187, and 2016 will be 261 million. That's the spend pattern that we now look at going forward. The spend then on black woman-owned businesses, 12%, 24 of the companies that we engage in and that we have contracted with are black woman-owned companies. That has increased from 9 in 2014 to 24 in 2016. And the spend with these particular companies has increased now from 30 million in 2014 to 300 million is what we estimate to close the 2016 financial year with. Those are the different statistics. The manner in which we draw these particular statistics is on a system that we use, which is SAP, and all of these are verifiable. All of that are in fact verifiable, and not the data that you see evidence here is data that has been put together outside of our systems in intelligence. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Oh, sorry, I didn't cover the one section. Yeah, that's fine. On preferential procurement. Sorry about that. Yes, preferential payment, yeah, I have it. Where are we right now? Certainly, we can see quite clearly, going straight into the statistics, that we don't believe very strongly that we should be where we should be. We certainly have to do quite a lot more work on this. What happens invariably is that when we do contracts with our supply base, we find that we default to a 60-day payment term or a 30-day payment term. But we can see that in terms of our payment policy that we've now put in place and that we are effecting, is that for specific beneficiaries, there will be preferred payment terms that will be offered. Currently, what we do is that we're trying to align this to maximize our scoring on the ESA triple B scorecard. Typically, this will be less than 10 days after the testing course. To put this into some context, when we have specific suppliers in specific categories within our system defaults the payment to X number of days. This is a global system that we have. We have spoken to our global teams right now to change our system and manner in which the payment terms need to be vetted, particularly looking at the SME sector. That has now been effected, and we will see the results of that coming through quite significantly towards the end of this year. It is fundamentally a systems change that we have to effect. To effect this particular systems change, we have to change it globally because our SAP system is run from a global platform. However, looking at some of the SMMEs that we do pay less than 38, and how do we do that? Is that I sign off a special payment proposal for us to change the payment. So what we bring as an interim measure until the system change takes effect, which unfortunately takes a bit of time in some instances, is that I sign off special payment proposals for early payments. I think I also want to explain very quickly that the manner in which we contract on payment terms, it is not contracted on the date of the invoice, it is contracted on the date of the receipt of the invoices into our system. For the simple reason that we want to make sure that internally and externally that there is compliance with what we have agreed contractually. We've had instances where invoices were incorrectly dated, and we then refer those back to our suppliers and assist them in having to correct us. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member Chair. So I'll just hand over on our transformation policies, but just one thing on the preferential payment terms. In terms of our contract also, what we do have is a situation where we need to have a clear acceptance criteria and also work completion notes based on the work undertaken and so on. And obviously these are for good motivation and reasons. Because we have sort of obligations under our contract and we need to ensure that sites are built correctly. Not only that, we have clear acceptance criteria. But obviously we have engaged, and he's going to, as he mentioned, we will have special payment terms that will sort of we will apply. Yeah. With that, I just hand over to Charlotte Markey. Just to go through our transformation.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Honourable Members. Thank you for the opportunity that you've given us today at Epson South Africa to come and present what we do in terms of our economic transformation policies, and I will go through the first slide. Looking at the first slide, you can see in terms of our transformation project, we have a steering group that would look at the project management of our transformation process. We focus on all five elements of triple BEE, and we have recently established a BEE transformation unit, which I am responsible for, and that was established in June, which is 2 months ago, and I guess for me this is an exciting period because now I'm coming into a situation that brings us forth to discuss with Parliament and our customers as well as our suppliers in terms of what we do in terms of transformation. Okay. As you can see, I think this is the slide that was supposed to obtain too. We established the unit in June 2016, and we've also brought in our BE consultants to help us make sure that everybody within the organization is aware of what's supposed to happen, because when you look at transformation, implementation of transformation, it's not directed in one area, it is something that's supposed to be looked at by the entire organization, and hence we made sure that as Ericsson, we have a dedicated team that looks at transformation and make sure that there are changes in the different departments within the organization. We are at the moment trying as much as possible to collaborate with our contract managers, because those are the ones who interact a lot with our suppliers in the SMEs. That's where we identify where the gaps are when you deal with suppliers. They have to deliver quality work to our customers, and that's where the real work has to start, instead of selecting one area which is sourcing to look after that. So we try as much as possible to collaborate with our contract managers. We also provide technical support, as my colleague Elsa has already reiterated, that we give technical support as well as OHS training to our approved services providers. We call them ESP, and this is something that within our day-to-day business, in terms of training our suppliers for them to understand our ways of working and reporting, because at the end of the day, they are the ones who do the work that has to be delivered to our customers. We also have early payments. We also conduct early payments, as already mentioned, that we understand that SMEs struggle with their cash flow. They have to deliver the work within a short space of time, and they have to do that with their own resources. And at the moment, when you realize that an SME is struggling, you have to provide them with early payment for them to be able to do the necessary work at hand. We also cover the overhead costs of some of our suppliers, as already mentioned, that a selection criteria that we use for certain SMEs to make sure that we assist them with support. I can see properly. And as my colleague Shilesi has already mentioned, there's an SME that we are supporting currently, and it's a youth-owned entity that has somehow developed an app that's supposed to be used by mini bus industry, whereby the taxi industry is able to manage the fleet, manage to look at their customers. So it's an app that's innovative and introducing the taxi industry to technology. And when you look at the support that we give to our suppliers and the enterprise development beneficiaries, we try as much as possible to make sure that it's an ongoing, sustainable process. It's not a hit and run whereby you just give early payment. You make sure that you create that sustainable relationship with those entities, make sure that you're able to deliver on time and quality work to your customers. And going forward, we will be doing coaching and mentoring for our SMEs. Obviously, it's not only about cash, it's also about them knowing how to run their business in terms of HR, finance, and marketing their business out there in the public. And that will be done with our internal managers to make sure that we are able to cover all the necessary areas where we find that there are gaps within our SMEs organization. We also do training on ICT tools and processes, as I've mentioned earlier, also in terms of their way of operating. Now, when you look at this plan, it might look small for now, but it's very detailed. There's a lot of work that has to be done behind development of small businesses. And I must reiterate that after looking at what Vodacom does, there is a lot that can be done in terms of developing SMEs. So in terms of Ericsson, we are really concerned in making sure that SMEs are supported and are able to stay sustainable and create jobs, because that's the most important thing that the country needs at the moment. There's a lot of unemployed youth out there, and they are very innovative and have good skills that can be used. So if we can, as a country, support SMEs, it will definitely help in terms of job creation. And this is an example of what Eva mentioned earlier in terms of health and safety. This is what we do with our contractors, all of them, to make sure that they are equipped to deliver quality work to our customers. We also look at ESG management. Unfortunately, we can't see the figures there, but when you look at the table on the right, those are the employees that we train of the suppliers. The skills that they get, it's important to mention that they're able to even do work outside of Ericsson, without depending on Ericsson only. They can also market themselves further to get more business in the market. So whatever training that Ericsson does is a very sustainable development, and it's very valuable to the SMEs as well. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Really appreciate the opportunity to provide a whole presentation and your that concludes the whole presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have a short break. Yes, we have a short break for two on contact. We talk about 10 minutes. Thank you. I'm becoming a disabled person. Yeah, I'm slowly becoming a disabled person.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for the presentation. I'm now going to open an opportunity for the members to ask questions. And before we do that, I would want to introduce Mr. George Raman, who comes from Nela Trading. The one that actually approached me, and many of the people that approach us who are approached either by government departments or companies, they would then say, hey, treat this carefully because I wouldn't want to be victimized and has got close for me to continue working. Even though that I'm not paid, I would say I have come to a level of selling my car in order for me to pay for the house. But taking that this carefully because I would still want to survive. So I'm saying that because it is true that some people who come forward and approach portfolio committee, they get victimized and get blacklisted, although it is not said that they are blacklisted. But down the line, they would be sidelined. And they would not want that to happen because it could mean that they people have nowhere to go. And we also take this session as a learning experience to give each party an opportunity for introspection and learn from one another to say how can we improve, because it is a known factor that we come from a very divided society. And also our country, although it is said it's the least economic country, but it is highly dominated by capitalism. And the private sector is controlling the economy, and we therefore need to treat this session as a learning experience to actually look at how best can we do things that would enable us to have a better South Africa with a transformed economy, opening opportunities for previously disadvantaged people, even taking into consideration that at their skill level will not be the same as the skill level of those who were not discriminated against during the other date. I just wanted to ask you, before we get into the discussion, that can you send up messages, Mr. George Weimar? Thank you very much. Is it now an opportunity for questions and comments to be made? Yeah. An opportunity for questions? Honourable Lebo?
Madam Chair, before we get into questions, to make my deliberation, I will propose a proposal to say how if you can start with the last presentation from the Ericsson so that you can spend more time on Vodacom. That is my request from you, Chairperson, and the committee. Thank you very much.
Honourable Minister.
Thanks, Chairperson. Can I combine the things? Because I thought I have one question each that are separate. The other questions, both of them can answer. Is that okay with you, Chairperson?
You may combine the two questions, but what will happen is that we would need to spend more time, as Honorable Zegwa has said, on everything.
Well, thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, we have to thank Linda and Vodacom for a very straightforward, simple and clear presentation. A question for Linda that does not apply to Ericsson is that why did they decide to subcontract management to Ericsson, and what process did they follow? Was there a tender that was put out, and did they look at Ericsson's business or card, and did they take that into consideration? and then maybe for Ericsson, the issue of terminating the contract that the person spoke about in the beginning, if it can be clarified why the contract was terminated without reason. And the chairperson also said that even though payment was made after 4 months, but it was just for 1 month. So we need a review on that. And back to Vodacom, the 7.2 billion that was with black-owned suppliers. I would like to ask you to please break down with black, because we know that traditionally in our country, black refers to three groups of people. Please do a breakdown for us. And secondly, the 112 million revenue that was spent on skill development. What is the format of this? What is the format that this skill development take? Is it a 4 month like lecturing method, or are people trained on the road?
Don't take all. Give other members a chance. Give other members a chance.
Set up three sewing companies. What are the names of those corporates and where are they located? Where would you visit some of them? Thank you.
Madam Papa?
Thank you, Chair. There are only two, and at the moment of that two, everything. One, there is somewhere you mentioned, it's documented that a company that is white, 100% white. I suspect that there should be some reason for that. It should not remain something negative or a negative impact on the organization. Some mechanism, whether it's democracy, equality, or party, should be some, because it's a very, very old coalition. So that we should actually to say this is not part of what is regarded as a racial exclusion. Now, the other one is, even this one, now I think I would like to get an access also. You mentioned that you are not where you want to be. To me, that is positive. It tells me that there should be some challenges, and also a way of addressing such challenges, because I know it was said that what I can guarantee is that transformation is always not nice, but you always have obstacles to get through. So definitely, to me, there are some challenges that are facing that make you not be where you would like to be, and how do we address that? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to check with Ericsson as to the contract termination. Are you preparing those who want to terminate their contract beforehand, that come this period, then your contract will not be renewed, or something that happens suddenly? And secondly, Chairperson, the establishment of transformation unit in June 2016. Why in 2016 is you shut up in 2016 and you said there is because you are dreaming of coming to the postal committee, then let us create issues that you want to talk about. If you can be able to take us on board in terms of that one, because it's not just suspicious. Last to Ericsson, how is your support? Is it only based on existing SMEs, or do you also look up for, do you also assist people who want to come into business, who are new into business? Let me appreciate the 3 days payment period that is indicated by Vodafone. And if perhaps you can share with us good practices, because we are concerned that some of our entities are not able to pay well within the 30 days. But now if you have what the strategy of saying within 3 days, then you are able to pay. Can you share with us as to how we can be able to assist others that they can be in a position to? We also appreciate that you are looking in the pace of cooperative development. Perhaps you can be able to speed up in terms of that one, because it will be able to assist us in terms of job and job creating. So that is actually the final
answer.
Thank you, Chair, and appreciation for the presentation by both parties. Chair, just allow me to ask the same question to both companies. Small businesses, and we know one of the biggest obstacles for small business to enter business is red tape. And I would like to know what are the two companies doing to reduce red tape so that small businesses can, to ease the business environment that small businesses and contractors are trying to get into on your supply base and what have you. Thank you. The same question to both companies.
Honourable Sam.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the two companies for their presentations. Some of my questions have already been covered by previous members, but I do have a couple of other ones. Ericsson, it's interesting to see your suppliers represented by SMEs went from virtually zero to several hundred billion to, you know, overnight. How is it possible for you to achieve that? And what did you do with your previous suppliers all of a sudden? Have they disappeared, I mean, in terms of your supply chain, or how have you incorporated them otherwise? Dan, I don't see a scorecard in this presentation for Ericsson. I assume that Ericsson is a wholly owned South African subsidiary of the parent company. Is that correct? So there's no local shareholding in Ericsson SA. All right. There is. Okay, I would like some further information on that, if possible. And then to see whether you are complying with the DTI's equity equivalent provisions in terms of the legislation, and how that is being adopted by you in your calculations of the ownership component of the scorecard. Then I'd like to just try and shift the thinking a little bit around why we're doing DE and why we're trying to build small businesses in this country. And Linda made the point earlier on that it's not a box-checking exercise for Vodacom. Right?
Yes.
It's part of your core business and has been since day one. This then leads me to the question as to, do you see supply development as principally for the benefit of the supplier, or is it also part of your drive to become more competitive as a business? Mm-hmm. Now that is a different approach. It's saying that in supply chains one can detect suppliers who bring innovations, they bring new ways of doing things, they bring cost competitiveness. You know, all the things that closed supply chains don't do because they like to do things the way they've always been done. Relationships between procurement personnel, procurement professionals and their suppliers go back a long way, and it's very comfortable to just let it be so forever. But if you turn the whole thing around and say that actually 5 cents a profit after tax spend on BE doesn't really move a dial on the business, on your business. It's piddling, in fact, in terms of the amount of impact that it can have on the business. What I'd like to know is, does your strategic direction at the CEO level include the realization or the possible realization of competitive benefits through developing your supply chain? And that then leads to the question, are you developing these supply chains into the global supply chains for Ericsson? No good just looking at Alaska. Because if South African economy is to grow, we have to build businesses that become globally competitive and enter global supply chains. They can start that by achieving it in your South African supply chain, but they can then go into the global supply chain. If we multiply this out by the number of businesses we have in this country, we have a chance of achieving our NDP goals. So it's a slightly different question to one that we were presented with right away, but I think it's strategic to our macro economy and how we get to actually grow out of us somewhat with internally focused obsession with BE. Not that I'm against BE, but BE itself is not going to transform the economy. What's going to transform the economy is growing the economy at 5% a year and becoming globally competitive in specific markets, and I'd like to have your views on that. Thank you.
Honourable Nia.
Thank you, Chair. Just one short question. Because my colleagues have covered some other questions. As I said, the Chair, Honourable Minister took everything. So I just have one. I just have one short question to Vodacom. In Gauteng, you have funded and established three swimming cooperatives. Now my concern is, they are three in one region of one province. Do you have any program to expand this program to other provinces, or was just this pilot project? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, sir. Let me just say this first before I just put my input. I'm just referring this to Ericsson. We are here as members of committees, but we are representing people out there, especially others from the African National Congress. Ours is to look at economy and look at our people. If all that you are saying is saving the people on the dam, I must say I'm very, very disappointed. From what the chairperson has said before we started the meeting, it sounds as if you are made aware that this is what the areas you need to cover when you come to present in the committee. But when you listen to your presentation, there's nothing reflect on that. So I'm not sure if you are coming here, you didn't know that you're coming to the committee, because it sounds as if you're coming to present your business and asking us to give some funding to you so that you can run your business. But there's nothing to reflect the MVP of what you're saying is African National Congress as a government that reflect on this presentation. So I will ask you when you come the next time that must reflect on the document. Secondly, even your words that you've been reading here, sometimes you can't even see what it is. So everything was not up to scratch. I'm talking to Ericsson. Let me just go to Vodacom. Your presentation was okay. It's okay. Everything is covered. But I'm looking at your figures. Let's go to this on youth development, your graduate leadership and learnership. I'm just sitting and looking at this. You're talking about the youth that has been graduated. But do you have specific areas, or you're targeting specific areas where you've got this youth, or it's just all over the board? Because if you're saying that, I'm saying in rural areas. I've never heard of this program in my rural areas. And I'm looking at your money that has been spent on skills development and the black empowerment. Are you talking about those people that when you're going to town in the rural areas, that are coming behind people and selling your headhands? Are you talking about those people? If it's not, where are they? Where to fit in? So that this community, when it's going out for oversight, we must see those people, we must go and see those people, that this is what is done. That is my only question to you, for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I also have my own question. I will start with Vodacom. On the page that on the slide that talks about Vodacom BEE data, there is a 218 million spent on uplifting community. I would want you to unpack exactly what the Vodacom do to uplift community. The reason for me to ask this question is that the usual trend is that if a crash is built, that would be referred to as uplifting a community, when we all know that there are uneven levels of development in this country. There are small businesses who are not able to grow their businesses, not because they lack the skills, but because there are a lot of barriers for them to enter a business. Then, on the slide that says empowering a nation through cooperatives, you are saying that you are doing that with DTI, and you started that last year. And at that time, the responsibility of developing cooperatives had long shifted from DTI. When this department was established in 2014, that responsibility of developing cooperatives and SMEs migrated to the Department of Small Business Development. Then the question is, can you tell us with whom in DTI you are actually doing this business? Because in our group, DTI should have referred to you, the small business. But also, there was a reason for shifting that responsibility away from DTI. Something is that it was informed by an observation that DTI was focusing more on big businesses. And evidence to that is that their own report of DTI 2009, where they were developing a strategy now for 2012 to 2022. Their own research says in this country there is 88% failure rate of cooperatives. That for me indicates that whatever they were doing did not yield positive results. And because of that, they were then relieved from doing what they are not good at. And they were given the responsibility to focus on things that they are good at. Now, if DTI and yourself are still continuing to do what is supposed to be done by this department, it is going to create a confusion, because the Department of Small Business would come up with a different way of developing cooperatives, and DTI will be continuing with what they've been doing all the years. And we even observe that at staff level, that the staff that migrated from DTI would want to maintain and do things in the same way that they were doing in DTI. Although what they were doing has only resulted with 12% success rate of cooperatives in this country. So we would like to get the and also for you to come back and tell us together with them what exactly are you doing in development of cooperatives, because you are saying a very important thing here: empowering the nation through cooperatives. Which would then mean that what is being done is within the understanding that the cooperative is not the end product. A cooperative is a tool for achieving community economic development. If you put that statement, it would mean that you are not necessarily developing cooperatives, which would then make us interested in showing the model that you are using and why it is only focusing just on one region instead of South Africa. The other question that I have for Vodacom is Vodacom stock. Let us understand why Vodacom stock has a low black ownership. The second one is, who funds this stock? Is there a fund that assists when you are assisting community development? Does it refer to a fund that has been created to provide entry of people that were previously disadvantaged? We are asking that because the franchising industry has got this tradition of creating policies that are actually a barrier to entry. And also they have a tradition of promoting monopoly. They go into an area and demarcate an area and say, we will no longer see, this era belongs to you, as a social being. Meaning that even if in that area there were other aspirants, franchisees, but this area, this whole of this area is demarcated for one person, that is promoting monopoly to the town. Then the barrier to entry will come from policies such as, for you to become a franchisee, you must put down 1 million rand deposit. And you must not have borrowed this 1 million. You must also have not won this 1 million. Even if you win the lotto, you shouldn't enter. The third one, you must not have inherited it. So we would want to know, because that is actually then preventing people who would have entered that space from entering the space. Then the question to Erickson is that to Vodacom, that when Vodacom shifted the responsibility of having a direct contact with the contractors and obligated that responsibility to Ericsson, what did Vodacom say to Ericsson so that the ideas of Ericsson would then be achieved through, the ideas of Vodacom would then be achieved through Ericsson? If you have something that says, thou shalt do 1, 2, 3, 4, because at the end of the day, it is the contract belongs to Vodacom, not Ericsson. So if Ericsson introduces new ways of doing things, Ericsson is then breaking the outstanding relationship that existed between the contractor and Vodacom, the owner of the contract. This is what I read when this case was presented to me. Because this contractor had been with Vodacom for more than 6 years. And when that responsibility is shifted to Ericsson, Ericsson can't keep the contractor beyond 6 months. Surely, if the owner of the contract has kept me for this long a period, and then the subcontractor that has to look after me is terminating my contract, there is a disjunction from what the owner of the contractor wants to achieve and what the contracted person to look after me is doing. That is the first question. Did you, as Vodacom, say to Ericsson, thou shalt do 1, 2, 3? Then, did you put the mechanism in place to then check on Ericsson that Ericsson is doing what Vodacom wanted to do? I am also asking this question because I am aware that there is some work that this client is still, this contract is still doing for Vodacom, which means there is nothing wrong then in Vodacom's view with the quality of work and performance of the contractor. Which then would mean there is something else from Ericsson's side that would result with the contract of this contractor being terminated. Not what the owner of the contractor actually wants. done. And when we talk of racism in this country, we usually focus on how people speak to one another. How others refer to other racial groups. But there is a lot of racism in the business. Policies that are developed by well-established companies in order to keep out certain racial groups from doing business. I am also aware of the racial group of the contractor that replaced this contractor. Because I live in that province and I was born in Harding, and Harding is 59 kilometers from Port Shepstone. So that is my area of constituency. If people who actually nominate you for me to come here, I represent them here. So that is the interest in this issue. Because as we are here, we represent political parties. And those members who come here to represent community are come back here on the basis of the interventions that they bring into place when those people are affected negatively. So we would want you to respond to those questions. I'm not going to have questions, more questions for Vodacom. Because Vodacom is not a contract, I mean for Ericsson, Ericsson doesn't have work. It's Vodacom that must tell us what Vodacom wants to achieve in terms of economic transformation in this country. And then Vodacom must tell us how Vodacom interacts and has a common understanding between Vodacom and everything in order for Vodacom to achieve what it wants to achieve. I will not chase a messenger. I will deal with the owner of the messenger, because all Vodacom is the one that has got the contract, that is taking the contractors on the ground, BEE contractors. All Ericsson doesn't have that. So I want to feel Ericsson. Because now you Ericsson can lose that contract if Vodacom realizes good air. Ericsson is not helping us to achieve what the country wants to achieve. So I'm not going to waste my time calling Ericsson. I'm going to speak to Vodacom. As my air, I have a long relationship with Ericsson. I was part of Ericsson. I only stopped working for Ericsson in 1999 when I was elected as a mayor. So my last pay from Ericsson was after the elections of 1999. I helped Ericsson to develop BEE and also to implement their program in Guamaru from a community perspective, because I've always been on community development. So Ericsson would not have taken me to work with them and make them understand community development. But I had a 212 number. But I also thought Ericsson to be a very progressive organization. I was surprised even by the manner in which they responded to me. Taking into consideration that this is a Swedish company, and Sweden was against apartheid. Sweden pulled out from this country when there was apartheid. They only came back. Sweden told its companies to pull out from South Africa. And the last thing is, my first car after being a member of parliament was Volvo. Again, made in Sweden. Reason is, I have a back problem. And the sake of that cup is designed for people who suffer from the lower back pain. That's how I know of Swedish Karanis. So, can we then respond?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm so well educated today, sir. I think I'm going to buy it also. Chairperson, my colleagues, Linda, Zahir, and Blake will do interchanging of answering questions to all members of the portfolio committee that have asked questions. The broader question, Chair, that I'm going to respond is the one that you raised it lightly. Just to put clear the position of Vodacom in relationship to the broader context of the question of the Chairperson. And secondly, Chair, also to report that before the session and during break, we have been at heart on each other with Ericsson in ensuring that we find a solution into the matter in question. We'll report about it, Chair, so that it was not viewed as if we didn't, we're not looking at the issue in a seriousness that it deserves. The fact that, Chair, this matter is in, being considered in this House, it means it is very important. It is very important also, it constitutes the fiber of why this committee is existing in any way. So therefore, we can't play with your time, we can't play with the time of the portfolio committee members. The second issue, Chair, that I wanted to respond about is the whole issue of the position of Vodacom in relationship to racism. Because I think it's very important that a company like Vodacom responds to that question and put our views very clearly that Vodacom stands against racism in any form. It's in that context, Chair, that you will see even where we are in terms of black economic empowerment, empowering of women, youth, and all that and so on. And in that context, Chair, there may be challenges like any other institution. It's a journey that we are all traversing, as honorable members said. And it's in that context, Chair, that our relationship with your committee, we are going to learn more and be subjected to inspection from time to time and be subjected to be criticized. And in order for us to grow, we must be open up to that kind of criticism and take those lessons and move forward. But on the racism issue, Chair, we will stand against on any form of racism. As the racism is making its head in any way in Vodacom, we deal with it and we will continue to. I'm speaking here on behalf of Vodacom. It is in its entirety in relationship to that issue. The second issue, Chair, that we pride ourselves in terms of the role that we are playing in terms of the economic development in South Africa. My colleague Linda, as she presented, she will come back again. You'll see the number of small medium enterprises that were developed before they come to the company, once they are in the company, as they go. That's why we talk about we develop, we support, and we engage. That model that we're using in Vodacom. But one question that is on the table. Chairperson, you're right. The company in question is still being engaged in Vodacom. Not on the transaction, of course, but my colleague there, Zari, will explain it. We are still, and we're confident in terms of the work that they are doing for us. That's why we're still engaging. There may be some different kind of formal contractual relationship that maybe the action will reply about, but the fact that Vodacom is still engaged with the company in question, it means that we still have confidence in the company and we're still working with them. But we're still working with that company. So I just wanted to remove as if maybe there was some kind of collision between others and everything that the company must be to take or must be managed in a different way. Lastly, Chair, the message of our CEO, and I want to repeat what he said last night, that we are not going to spend as Vodacom where the brand of Vodacom is negatively affected in any way. So we said to everything, everybody must be able to stand up here and manage and making sure that we take responsibility for our actions on us. And raise with everything before the meeting that we're going to stand up and making sure that Vodacom, yes, of course, we can't make the baby and make the baby grow once the baby is grown, is 18 years, is not longer our child. We take full responsibility, Chair, of the issue that we should have put monitoring mechanisms even afterwards that our SWOT model you know, and that's the lesson we are taking from this meeting. We've already agreed with Eric Sinclair that after the session, we're going to have monthly meetings in assessing where we are, where are they in managing all those entities that have been outsourced to them, in making sure that where there are shortfalls and challenges on them, we help them. So I'm saying we take full responsibility, Chair. I don't want us to come here and say, no, we're not responsible. You are right. We should have, even at the beginning, but this is a new model that will come between 6 up to 3 months that we have been involved. But I'm saying, Chair, we take full responsibility. We can't say, it's not our fault. We should have put those monitoring mechanisms, and even the case in question, we learned about it very late. It's not the fault of the portfolio committee. It's not the fault of your Ericsson. We take full responsibility for the Comcom that we should have done this, what we have been asked to do today at the beginning. We take full responsibility, you know. But also, as the Ericsson, we have to take responsibility on actions that have taken place within that contract. Lastly, Chair, we have agreed to...
Sir, within that contract and many others that you may not know of.
Fair point, Chair. Fair point, Chair. Fair point. And we have agreed, Chair, according to the team here, that model of monitoring is not going to reflect only on one entity. We just want to check now with Ron so that we don't come back here on the same issue again. The last issue, Chair, that we've agreed with the Axiom is that we need to review this matter. And we need to agree on the time frame, very short time frame, to come back and give a report, consult the respective principals, and see what is best can we do to remedy this matter. Because it means something has gone wrong. You know, we admit that something has gone wrong, and Ericsson also, I think, also genuinely they are admitting that something has gone wrong. You know, and it needs to be corrected. Where we are sitting here, we're saying that something will have to correct this issue, whatever it means, come back and give you a satisfactory answer in ensuring that those that are disadvantaged are not being put to the periphery of the economy. Thank you, Chair. My colleagues will take the respective answers. But I feel like that context, Chair. Let me just outline it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Timber. Chair, if I may, I'm going to handle all of the BE luck-related matters. My colleague Craig will expand on how we do not put Chinese walls or brick blocks in front of franchisees to enter into our franchisee space. And then you will obviously engage further on the supply chain management matters. With regards to the co-ops, and I want to start there, yes, I acknowledge the fact that the Ministry of Small Business started up in 2014, and hence the committee and that. The negotiations actually started around about that time with the DTI. But some of them merged in with the Department of Small Business and the Ikaluni Municipality. So we started there first. Bearing in mind this is it's a new model. We learn by trial and error. You can't go and do a national launch without knowing where your strengths are, where your weaknesses are. To roll effectively out, you need to then fix weaknesses so that you do not impede negatively on people's lives through other provinces. So I do hear the call and advice for a wider presence. That will happen. It's offered here. We've got no case study, no information yet as to the real impact, how we have effectively changed lives. So, Jay, if I may ask that we be given this first-year period to assist the development of it and then engage further in terms of once we actually know how this model works and have tweaked all those little nuances that may be of a negative, have a negative impact, that we then coming back and with Mace show you what the 3 to 5 year path is looking like on top of that.
Well, see there is a word called pilot. we would have preferred that instead of saying we are empowering a nation, because the nation is South Africa, you would have then put a heading that says, we are piloting a model that we think would empower the nation. That then is the correct thing, because now, when you say you are empowering a nation, and then you refer to a government municipality, and then when you respond now and say we are piloting, then I am getting a confusion. But also in your response, you are saying when you were talking to them, you were already aware which was not small business, 2014. And I'm going to measure it, create a conflict. You are saying the president was wrong by saying this responsibility must shift and a new department must be established, because you are going to the same department. So you are not helping the country to deal with the confusion that is created, where each and every department is saying it is developing cooperatives when they actually do not have a working model.
Noted, Chair, and apologies. I think my passion sometimes seems to run away from me, so I tend to put my philosophy down without taking cognizance of the fact that there is truth in words. That having been said, so on that particular matter, on the questions, I'm going to go backwards on the questions, because they were philosophical type-based questions that were tabled to us. Honourable Trump, so with regard to that, when we look, and again, you know, BEE is a transformation or an economic development vehicle. It's an end to a particular means. I don't believe that it is ring-fenced, particularly just to get or give effect growth in this country. And by that I say, I don't believe it has been set up to grow businesses, black-owned businesses in this country to serve this country's interests only. I believe that we are becoming a one-world nation, and in terms of like that, ultimately, the net effect of all of our national policies is to actually drive throughout this entire global family. Because your question requires a little bit more stronger thought, and I think about different presentations, what was put to you, if we may ask for a period in which we can come back to the committee with regards to our specific response to your question. I would appreciate that. The question around the 280 million rand investment in our socio-economic aspect, which the chair raised, and I think there were one or two other questions raised in it. Vodacom's emphasis is on education of the youth of this nation, and on health, the security of our people. And that is where our core community building focus lies. It does not lie in putting up a building and saying we have done great. It lies in empowering people with the resources necessary that we can grow our nation's people properly. So when you look at what have we actually done, where is Vodacom's focus? Focus is in developing e-learning portals where school children can access from any point the curriculum, the guide tools in how to comprehend the lessons being taught. But going a step further, it is about empowering the teachers of the very students with the skill sets on how to effectively utilize this new ICT world, this digital world where everything is a push button, a touch, a moved screen. So that is where Vodacom's development lies, Chair. It's about bringing the medical sector closest to rural people so that people suffering of TB or HIV or any other illness do not have to get into millions and one taxis, exaggeration, but to get to a particular hospital. Instead, it's about bringing that service to those own people and thereby assisting in keeping down costs to get basic services to the citizens. So that is Vodacom's passion and obviously Vodacom's involvement. With regard to the unpacking of the rate of 51%, the 7.2 billion rand spent, and noting obviously that collectively the BEE has viewed black people as African colored Indians, and noting of course also that in the verification of the ownership will not necessarily define the exact racial structure depending on who in theory verified that particular entity. That being said, and the fact that in Vodacom, our supply chain engagement is a partnership-based one and not a supplier-client base. And by so saying, that basically means that we know every owner of every entity, or at least who is holding value to it. So, if I can ask for 14 days in which to show out and give you a clear indication. Obviously, Poppy is going to trigger you, so I won't be able to define exactly who these people are or the supplier's name. But I think more importantly, if you want to actually look at a demographical split out, we can have a look at that for you.
There was a question that said, asked by the same member that asked the committee to know who these contractors are. There was a question that said, what made Vodacom to subcontract everything when Vodacom had been dealing directly with the contractors?
Sorry, I just realized that there is one question that I missed out, and that was the composition or the makeup, the look and feel of the 112 million rand field development investment. The 80% of our field training is tertiary. It is qualified training. The reason being that is ensuring that we grow the core critical skills base that is very much needed in the ICT sector. Okay, there is, if you look at the rank value split out, there's constant on-site in business training happening on a regular basis. But when you look at the outside of the on-the-job training, which is a 365-day approach, more importantly, because we are part of the global world and we are part of the ITU and part of our specifics are governed by the ITU body, we obviously need to ensure that we have the global skill set and knowledge. So it's a balance between qualified, certified training, local as well as internationally based training on one side. In the middle, it is training that is specific to say, Ericsson or Huawei or any of our internationally based like suppliers on their like specific products. And then the third leg is on the job training constantly, which is done both from an online experience as well as a physical in the field space. So that's the handling of the 112 million rand that was spent in FY15-16. Sorry, there was one other question that was asked, and that was whether Vodacom would come back to the committee with regards our 3-day payment, SMME strategy, how we got to drive, and how policy work with the greatest of pleasure. I think it's very important that we have a look and we start sharing what is arguably a good business practice case. So, and it's something that has taken us time to actually do.
May I ask that a response to the question that was asked by Honorable Kruger because he's going to be with the red tape?
Follow-up question on the field of that.
Yes.
Follow-up. I was just wondering,
the partnership with the CITOS, because I didn't hear anything about the CITOS, and surely if partners up the CITOS, we can double that amount of money spending on civil development. So I just want to know, what is your relationship, the partnership with CITOS?
We work exceptionally close with MIGITA. The ask on Vodacom and any other company is, and that is the recognizable BE training spend. Okay, my total training spend is 180 million rand. Up to 200 million. But what I've given you is the spend component that is limited in terms of recognition from a BE angle, not the collective training spend.
Honourable Chair, I will address the following questions. So let me first start by summarising the main topics that I picked up, and if I've missed anything, to just leave, you know. So the first question revolves around why did we look at outsourcing? What was the RFP process followed? How do we go about removing red tape for companies or persons interested in entering into providing services or products to Vodacom? What do we do around supplier development? What is Vodacom's role in assisting to globalize local suppliers? What is our involvement with the management of the contractors that has now essentially been handed over to Ericsson? And that very broadly are the main topics that I've picked up. So let me start, and then if there's anything specific, please interrupt me at any time, and I'll answer. So why did we go about outsourcing? We started this last year, January 2015, and I was actually part of the team that was formulated or put together with our supply chain, and we had an external company called Accenture that assisted us in building this business case. And the business case essentially looked at the feasibility of outsourcing only one area of the business, which is what we call field maintenance. Now, field maintenance is broken up into two areas. Number one, the one part is maintenance of the actual radio equipment, so this is the network or equipment that's transmitting radio frequencies, and this is housed in our containers. And that portion of the network requires maintenance. And then the second part of the network is the actual civil infrastructure. So this is the ground, the steel towers, the containers, and the property where our network equipment is housed. And that is going to be passive maintenance. So we've brought this together. When we looked at areas of inefficiencies in the business, Vodacom currently has 8 regions. And each region essentially has their own group of contractors that executes the scope of field maintenance in a very, very non-standard way.
So that's the one area which you said, we need to standardize the way we do maintenance in the company. And the main reason for that is because we saw it was executed in a very non-standard way. Every region and company providing these services were, if I could put it very bluntly, doing their own thing, with very little guidance according to a specification. And because of a lack of a specification, there was a lack of quality in the way services were rendered. You know, if you look at quality, you define something is only good quality if it meets a certain design or specification. And if it meets that design or specification, it is deemed to be good quality. And what we found was there was a very inconsistent approach. Secondly, when we had many suppliers providing the services with varying prices. So in Gauteng to do that activity A, it was X amount of rand, and in the Western Cape, it was B amount of rand. So what didn't make sense to us is, you know, if you're looking at companies with strong regional presences, where travel and labor cost does not necessarily impact the pricing of that service because you're in the province. You know, not if you're taking someone from Gauteng and saying to do work in Western Cape. The inconsistency in the pricing was a huge area that required some attention, but delivering the same service. We also looked at how are we pricing or how are we being billed. And we were being billed within the maintenance space predominantly on what we call an activity-based pricing or an activity-based costing. So for every activity that needs to be executed on the site, there would be a bill for it. If you look at also trends in the industry, most cellular operators are moving away from that model to a managed services model, which essentially works on a cost per price irrespective of the volume of activities required to execute the maintenance. And what I mean by that, Vodacom has on average around 11,500 base stations. And we have a commercial arrangement with Ericsson which has a certain price on the base station for the execution of the scope. So whether Ericsson goes to a site to do maintenance once or a million times, we pay the same amount per site. So that had a huge impact. And that really, I think, for us made a very strong case to look at outsourcing or adopting a managed services model for field maintenance. And this was essentially executed at a regional level previously. And that in a nutshell is why we looked at outsourcing. And the business case proved to be positive, and we made the decision to enter into an RFP process. So let me tell you the story of how we went through the RFP process. So the first thing is we designed the scope. And the scope defined what it was that we needed to be executed. So that every supplier that was invited to respond to this RFP or to submit their tender had a very clear indication of what it is they needed to do and the scale thereof. So, because at the end of the day, they needed to build up their commercial model. So we entered into the scope finalization, and because we as Vodacom are part of the Vodafone group and the scope and scale of this project, it is actually the largest services contract in Vodacom to date. We had to involve our partner procurement company within the Vodacom group called Vodafone Procurement Company. So they had involvement with us and worked together with us during the entire process. So the team was essentially made up of about five or six local guys, and then we had one person representing the Vodafone Procurement Company. And they essentially managed the logistics around how the responses were coordinated, the setting up of online systems and tools for them to submit their responses and to be scored. So the very much their support was more administrative to ensure the consistency, mainly because this type of managed services model is not only common to cellular operators within South Africa. I mean, the likes of MTN, Telkom, Telstra all have this type of model within the various areas of operation. It is, in fact, something that's done globally. We identified companies that we wanted to invite. It was what we would call, if I could say, a closed tender, because we only looked at companies within the industry, locally and globally, that could provide these services. So it wasn't an open tender where
So any company that does not have experience in telecom or the scope of what we want to execute could respond. So we identified all of these companies and we issued them invitation letters. Some declined, some accepted, and then we moved forward with the ones that accepted. We then had a notice period of when they needed to submit certain presentations and documentation and written proposals. And the first part of the RFP evaluation process was essentially a technical component. So here we assess, do these companies that have accepted to respond to the RFP have the technical ability and know-how to execute on the scope? And we did this via the establishment of a steering committee within Vodacom, which was made essentially of all the regional executives, the regional heads of. We had some national support functions, areas like health and safety, security, supply chain, operations. So all of those areas were put into the vehicle. All the vendors were then invited to do presentations, and based on that presentation, there was a certain scoring, and a short listing that followed. The scoring looked at four areas specifically. There was the technical component, then we looked at the commercial offering, then we looked at health and safety, and then BEE. So those four factors were the primary decision-making criteria on which the vendors were scored. So each one had a weight, and there was a scoring attached. After each shortlisting process, we eventually got to the point where we needed to do a due diligence. So we did a technical due diligence where teams literally went to the vendors' offices, premises, and assessed the so-called technical abilities that were essentially presented in a boardroom. So that was more to get a greater deal of comfort around, is there alignment between what these companies presented to us on PowerPoint in the boardroom and what is the reality on the ground in the areas of operation and in the offices. We also invited, we also interviewed other companies, other staff from other operators who were also now entering into a managed services model and what was their experiences with companies. Again, there was a shortlisting after the due diligence. And only after the technical due diligence did we enter discussions around commercials. And this was really the pricing discussions. And, there were three or four stages of negotiations to the point where we eventually got to what we call a BAFO, which is a best and final offer. And that's the final submission now from these vendors. And again, because because we had the involvement of the Vodacom procurement company, this TFO was not only made up of local execs, but also global, within the Vodacom group. And eventually the decision was taken to appoint Ericsson from the short list of three. So that's really the RFP process. It was quite comprehensive. It took just under a year with a lot of consultation. In fact, even when we looked at our existing vendors, we identified all the vendors that operated within the field maintenance space being passive and active. We had one-on-one sessions with these vendors, basically looking at what is going to be the impact on these vendors if we terminate the contract for them and move them over to a managed services provider, which was a common point. That was quite important to us because essentially there was never an intention from Vodacom's side for any company that is providing a large scope and scale of work on a consistent basis to Vodacom to lose that business. Essentially, we all saw this as, if I could say, a Section 197 coming into play because our business never stopped. Field maintenance within Vodacom did not stop. It just moved from Vodacom to another company. Now, when that business moves, fast the people and resources associated to that business move with that business. So whether we were using supplier A, B, or C, and now we move to Ericsson, supplier A, B, or C, their business should not have stopped because it should have just moved. Instead of them now working with Vodacom, they simply work now with Ericsson. So, we had several legal consultations on this as well, and it was quite clear that Section 197 essentially applied. And this is why we had regular consultation sessions, and prior to going live with Ericsson, which was on 1 March this year, we had issued letters of termination to our existing suppliers, notifying them that in the first place, these suppliers were handed over to Ericsson. So they would have defined the same to Ericsson and say, these are the suppliers doing business with us, you have an obligation to use them. At least for, you know, a certain portion of the project until the project matures and there's a certain decision that's made. But the suppliers were identified and the list provided to Ericsson. Ericsson then was of course obliged and brought those contractors on board. Let's talk about the removal of red tape. So first I think there has to be a perception that red tape does exist. Before it can actually be removed. Let me say, you know, we're within the technology space. If the red tape, you could define it as that, mainly when it comes to providing service. But let me separate product and service. Now, on the product side, because we are a technology company, and products vary technically from one to another, even though some are made to provide the same output. In terms of products, when you want to come and supply a product to Vodacom, we have a dedicated team in place that will evaluate your product. We will set up trial agreements. We will test that product over a period of time. We will evaluate whether it works. We will assist you in developing the product further. There are many, many products at this stage, as an example, that are made from local companies that now sit on a Vodafone price book. And that is one way in which we actually globalize our local suppliers. So from a product perspective, we will provide, generally a supplier will come to us, they'll give us the product, we'll trial it, we'll make recommendations, we'll assist them in developing, we'll provide them access to our network so that they can test and trial these products. And in that way, we actually, you know, we see it as a beneficial thing because we take a company with that has a product which essentially works, and we take the product and we guide them and hold them to a point where the product is not even what they intended to be, but much, much more with our support. And we provide all of those resources and technical skills. But that's from a product side. And eventually, if five companies come to the product, we'll trial their product with them, we'll test it. And at the end of the day, we have to make a choice in terms of that product. Then it's quite easy. On the service side, it's not necessarily reactive, but it is more complicated. And let me explain why it's complicated. Firstly, it's complicated when there's compliance with IT legislation. And that is one area that, firstly, we do not compromise on. We see it as very important. Secondly, health and safety is extremely important. So we have a certain set of rules that companies have to abide to. Because the services rendered in the telecom space requires certification, so it requires compliance. It requires things like electrical competency, electrical certificate, wiring licenses. That we did not negotiate on, unfortunately. You know, if I could say it is what it is. You know, even on our driving standards, we require defensive driver training. We require 4x4 training. Maybe because we have companies with tow generators. We have staff that drive vehicles in roads that a normal person may not necessarily be able to drive on. So that type of red tape, which is generally associated to either compliance, certification, for us, firstly, it's not red tape. It's there to protect us as an organization. It's there to protect the individual that rendered those services. We do not want situations where a staff that were not skilled, for example, do electrical work, and now they get electrocuted and they end up in hospital or die. So if that is seen to be red tape, then I'm going to say it exists, but it's there for a valid reason. In terms of the ease of getting a supplier registered, that is very easy if you apply to all the rules. And supplier registration process is actually quite simple. I mean, it's a fact of documentation, you give it to the company, and, you know, there we go. For example, if our criteria is a certain level of DE, you know, certification, if you don't have it, you know, then you will not be registered. But what we will do is say, you need to do the following. And in fact, we've done it with Ericsson. And we have to get permission from them as an example that at a certain point in time, they will be at a certain level. And they have to provide a plan. So we'll do it with most companies. Even if you do not comply, let's say you're one level below, then we would require a plan from you to say, listen, at what point, this is what you need to do, and this is by when you need to do it. If you don't do it, we'll terminate business with you, as an example. On health and safety, we don't negotiate. So that is something, it's got to be there.
Or if it's not there, then, you know, unfortunately, you're not going to get the business. On technical compliance, let me move on to supplier development. So first and foremost, for us, supplier development is extremely important. And I'm going to get rid of sort of the name supplier, and I'm going to refer to what my colleague referred to, and that's partners. And that is really, I think, a culture that has somewhat driven from Shamil. When we have these year-end functions or any functions where our partners are invited, they're always referred to as partners. We do not say contractors and suppliers because they partner with us. When we are successful, they are successful. If we fail, they essentially fail. So, they also our partners to the point where they have a significant contribution towards our success. So what do we do to develop them? Number one, we have to ensure they apply to country laws as well as company laws. Now, because we are a global company, we have the Vodacom portion, we have the Vodafone portion. So there, we are always assisting them in getting that. So what is the advantage of that? Firstly, they are able to do the type of work anywhere in the country. Secondly, they are also able to do it anywhere globally, with Vodafone being such a global organization and having a common set of laws or principles that literally apply to all the opcos. Secondly, we have regular supplier engagement sessions and workshops where they inform the various changes within Vodacom, various things they need to comply to, what do they need to do, how do they need to do it, we even find some of them. So there is constant communication. In terms of supplier development, we are always looking at taking a supplier, doing a small scope of work for us, and then eventually developing them to providing a broader scope. And this is how many, many companies have grown. I mean, I'm 18 years now in Vodacom, and if I look at the companies that I dealt with when I was still a very junior engineer working in the Pretoria office, some of those companies are now global organizations or have a presence in the entire country. So, we've taken companies that only worked in a small little suburb who expanded into a city that now have a national presence, and because we have operations in DRC, Tanzania, Mozambique, Lesotho, are now even operating in other countries. We've taken companies who are able to only climb up a mast and move an antenna to the same organizations now being able to build our sites for us. So that is the level that we have gone through in terms of supply development. We've taken them through all the health and safety certification required. We've given them the training. We've advised them on training courses. So in terms of developing the suppliers or supporting them, for us it's in our best interest because number one, you build a relationship. And that relationship is built on the understanding that when I grow, you grow. And that is very important to us because we also look at companies who get to know us and we get to know them and we have an understanding and people say, well, I know how voters can work, I know what they expect, I know this is not going to be a lot or that's going to be a lot. But there's a common understanding. It's easy to do business that way as well. So that's quite important. And also for the new suppliers. Companies that say, don't make them our boots. We never end those relationships, ever. Because that is all the opportunities for us, opportunities for your business. So there again, there's always constant engagement. They are constantly being kept up to date of what they need to do, what do they need to meet to enter in Vodacom. For example, if there's a certain type of electrical work that is required, and this is a particular certificate or compliance that's needed, then the companies are advised of what they need to do and where they need to close the gap and how do they need to close the gap. On globalizing suppliers, as I mentioned previously, it's very easy to do when you talk about products. Services is a bit different, mainly because services generally, they focus on a skill level, a presence, a labor rate, and a travel rate. So that's very much a regional activity or a country activity. On products, it's much more easier. Firstly, any product that gets approved in Vodacom, produced in Vodacom, is also on the Vodafone price book. And being on the Vodafone price book means that any one of the Vodafone-operated opcos all over the world are able to choose that product from that supplier. All of these discussions and supplier presentation actually takes place in Luxembourg. So every single one of our suppliers who supply a product has been invited to global presentations within the Vodafone group, and once
the product is listed on a price book, that product can essentially be purchased from any other Vodafone OpCo in the world. They are given that exposure. So from the services side, it is very difficult to do so because the service is pretty much standard. But from the product side, there are products that South African companies have manufactured, which we have assisted to manufacture, which we have assisted them to build and upgrade. They're now being used in other Vodafone companies. So, I think we've really made significant progress there. They are also, and we've been able to leverage off the Vodafone procurement company that essentially deals with this. Now, the Vodafone procurement company does not only sell products, purchase products from poor operators, they're also doing it for other areas of the business.
There is a follow-up question.
No, I'm sorry, it's not a follow-up actually, but I'll give you now answers. I think you need a workshop for what you're saying. That's really true. Thank you very much. But I would like to answer the one thing, and I think, this is a gap that we identify by being involved in this particular meeting, and this is what is Vodacom's involvement with the supplies that we have handed over to our managed services partner, Ericsson. And our contract, whilst it is very comprehensive, it is very specific, one of the areas where it is very specific is around Vodacom must approve when Ericsson wants to bring in new supplies. But, I was speaking to my colleague Temba earlier, and I said that the first thing I'm going to do after this is I'm going to get all of my supply chain colleagues. Because what we need to start introducing in our contracts is when managed service partners want to terminate contracts, and that is quite important. So the other gap is with this managed services model, because it's also fairly new to Vodacom. We literally went live only in March. The one thing that has become very clear to me is that we've lost visibility of our supplier performance. I don't know how my suppliers perform anymore. When I used to have a personal one-on-one relationship with each of them, I've now taken all of them and I've put them under one managing partner being Ericsson. And all I do is I manage Ericsson. And if Ericsson doesn't perform, then I slap them on the hands. But when Ericsson doesn't perform, they're not performing because someone in their contractor base is not performing. Now, I don't know who that someone is anymore. And what we need to start doing is add more visibility. So we've actually engaged with Ericsson, and we've agreed that we'll start having monthly governance forums where we will not only we already review Ericsson's performance, and that governance structure is in place. So we look at Ericsson's performance because we measure their performance against the SLA. But when that SLA is not met, we only reprimand Ericsson or we take action against Ericsson. Now what we need to do is have more visibility around who in their supplier base is performing and who's not performing. What is that level of performance? What are they doing to ensure that they are providing proper guidance and leadership to the companies that are not performing? Are they getting proper direction? Because, I use the example, it's like managing an employee. If someone doesn't do something right the first time, you're not going to dismiss them. You performance manage. You give them training. You give them a time, there's constant feedback, you evaluate. So in the same way we manage employees in our business, we need to manage our partners. So that's something that's definitely going to be put in place. In fact, I was last week in a meeting with the Ericsson reporting team, where we've identified the need for reports on the various vendors and contractors that are using, so that we can, vendor performance must not be perception based. It has to be quantified. So we want everything to be based on fact, and they must show evidence. So, in closing, we have identified that there's a gap, but we've taken correction action. It's really now just a matter of execution. And being Monday, I think we'll have the first supplier performance meeting end of September. So those are the points that I've noted. If there's anything that I've missed or which I have not addressed, someone is asking please raise the question.
Good afternoon, Chair and the rest of the committee. I'm going to try and be short, and I'm going to try and answer the most important question is what red tape exists for being able to operate within the retail franchise channel within Vodacom. So I think most importantly, I'd like to make it pretty clear that as far as we're concerned, over the last few years, a lot of hard work has been done in terms of trying to make our channel as nationally geographic representative as possible. I think if you have a look at the franchisee ownership profile that Linda showed you a little bit earlier, where you've got the split between black-owned and white-owned, it sits at 73% from a black-owned, whether it be less than 50, above 50, or 100%. Are we happy with that? No. Do we still have a lot of hard work ahead of us? Yes. I think from a red tape perspective, when a new franchisee comes into the equation, we don't think we have red tape because our job is to make sure that we support that new franchisee from the very first year. We have a franchisee agreement that he would sign, but most importantly, we would support him from a rental support point of view. So if he owes us 20 or 30,000 rand a month, we would pay 100% of that for the first year, 80% of that for the second year, 60%, 40%, 20%. We also spend a lot of time with new franchisees in terms of training and upskilling and development, which is very important to us because being a telco business, the most important thing is easy to come in, but it's very difficult to remain there if you don't get those skills. So we have set up with our regions where the regions constantly go in, and very similar to what I said previously, is there's a lot of monthly coaching done to make sure that the people that have come new into business don't fall off after 1 year. Our job is to keep them there and to grow them. I think what's also pretty important is that we don't expect an upfront franchisee fee for some of our stores, especially when it comes to looking at our EE partners. To us, the most important thing is to be able to give a person the opportunity to start off, and then our job as Vodacom is to manage that relationship and to build that person. I think the other two things that I just want to share with you, and I'm sure you would all know, is that we also provide support from a hardware perspective for them, for our stores, and then we also provide ongoing annuity and upgrade fees. So there's a lot of support that Vodacom provides, but I think the most important aspect in terms of the question that was asked is the red tape. There is no red tape, but it's a consistent relationship, and it's consistent hard work between the entrepreneur and the franchisor in terms of making it work. And I think over the last 2 to 3 years, we've seen a little bit of a transformation happening in our business, but we're not there yet. We know we're not there yet. So Linda also spoke about it. We have an aggressive accelerated plan, which if you would like to see it, we could always come back and unpack that in a little bit more detail with you. But once that is working progress at the moment with the board, and Jamil is also pretty close to that. Okay, Linda's asking me to end with one of our franchisees in the Eastern Cape, and I'm Tata, Judy Jennings. She's been with us for 20 years. She's a black African woman. She's just won an award on July the 8th at the Midrand Conference Center for being the top African entrepreneur for SME and business from a regional aspect, and now she's up for the Africa Award. So she owns some really good franchise stores. If you go to the Eastern Cape, those are all her stores, and she's a fantastic operator, and she sits on our franchise council.
I didn't get your last point. You said if you go to Eastern Cape, those are all your stores. So you are demarcating areas to...
She has stores in Eastern Cape, and she has some stores in Joburg, but she won it for the Eastern Cape area that she lives in.
That's exactly what you are asking. Maybe let us simplify the question to say, what is your policy for allocation of outlets? Is it one person, one store, or so many stores, one person?
If we look at going forward, it's one person, one store. We definitely changed that policy. Judy has four doors, but she's a fantastic operator. But when you look at any new store, it's one person, one store.
And then you said there are no upfront fees.
So we have a concept, you saw what they're called, express stores. So express stores are stores that are like 40 square meters, and they go into, we have certain criteria in terms of GLA of the shopping centers and how big the store is. And then we also look at the partners that are coming on board. So we definitely don't have upfront franchise fees for the express stores.
No, you have to come back to this because my information tells me, okay, you have Vodacom shops, you have Vodacom repair centers. I've only taken my phone to Vodacom repair, Vodacom for you, Vodacom Express. Their relationship between Vodacom and Sartella. Okay. Vodacare. So we are not going to get into that detail today. But I will be writing a letter again to Ericsson. This now speaks to transformation of the franchising industry to open an opportunity for people to participate in all these sections, because that has not been the case. But also to ensure that there is no barrier to entry. So let us park this revisit. I'm saying that in the context of the Freedom Charge, clause 3, go and read it. The wealth of the country shall be shared among the people. All trades and industries shall be controlled to assist the well-being of the people. We can't have a country where 60% of budget is corrupted budget and only 40% is productive budget. We can't have a country where families survive only on government handouts. Child support grant, 11.9 million. Translating to 49.9 billion per year. And if we were to then open opportunities for more people to enter the mainstream economy, we wouldn't be having poor families looked after by government. Because then people would borrow money to enter that space, because we are putting in place policies that are enabling people to become self-sufficient instead of belonging to government. We may see it as a good thing to promote monopoly, but at the end of the day, this country will be a welfare state for the poor and a developmental state for the rich. And the rich will have to be taxed more for government to look after the welfare state within South Africa. So we must do all these things, bearing in mind that there is no way that a black people can be wiped out of South Africa and no one would have to look after them. For government to look after black people through handouts, government has to tap rich people. Thank you.
It closes on the question that asked, but Chair, I just wanted to say that Paul Makuba, she is going to make a follow-up, Chair, on all the questions that we've had. We are bringing them back. She makes a follow-up with your office in ensuring that we come back on all the commitments that is made from Vodacom. But I'm saying that because I want to put a face to say that she'll be in your office when again and ensure that this commitment we are making is her responsibility amongst the team that is here. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for that. Can we then move on to Ericsson's question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Firstly, if I can just comment, and I'm glad for the closing comments you made on the last question you made in terms of where Ericsson is and where we transform in this topic. But maybe a couple of apologies. Firstly, to yourself, Madam Chair, there was no disrespect intended for the manner in which this matter was handled, especially with Neela Trading. I think it was purely more a question of just authenticating and more integrity and that sort of thing. But I think there's also a lesson to be learned there. But absolutely no intention to undermine it.
Can I stop you there? After the first letter, I specifically called after the first letter of Ericsson, I specifically put fold, and I was on sick leave. So I saw this as showing me a middle finger. Because when you receive letters and you have not had any direct exchange to explain the situation, you would then not have this kind of perception that I did after this. So I still believe that you have to deal with your people to make them come to your level of understanding and make them come to a level of understanding what Parliament is.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. And thus we will take an action forward within our own internal organization. And that is all part and parcel of transforming our organization, that they know how to handle situations. But I do really apologize for that situation emanating and what perception you created. Secondly, also apologies for the sort of presentation. I think there was a lot of detail in there which we tried to kind of accommodate in the presentation, and that became a bit crowded, and that's something which we tried to condense in the presentation. So I think that came to Honourable Beckford's kind of sort of disappointment, and I really apologize for that.
Can I come in there?
Yes, sure.
The point made by Honourable was, we have put questions to you of the information that we would want to get from you, and you are not giving us, you are avoiding responding to those issues. It was not a detailed information related to the issues that we wanted to hear about. It was a detailed information of what you wanted to tell us. It was not necessarily what was in there.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Maybe what we can do, if you wish, we can kind of go back and rework that presentation and then submit it to your good office so that it kind of condenses the information but also specifically address exactly the questions that were posed. If I can just go back and just look at just the B aspect of the questions that that I noted, and I'll be succinct and as conscious as possible, because I know we're running a lot of out of time. But in terms of the first question, which was Honourable Makweva, I think the first thing was that the company is kind of that there's no racial connotations absolutely whatsoever. We do not believe in that. It's in our DNA, it's in our constitution, meaning our code of conduct, our code of business ethics. In fact, any racialistic attitude or impressions or sort of behavior is actually a dismissible offense. So that we have everyone sign off, every employee in Ericsson signs off to that, globally as well as locally and regionally. So that is first and foremost, I just wanted to put on the record. Then in terms of Honourable McCrever's question is Ericsson not being where we want to be, what are the challenges and obstacles to get through? I think we've been transforming for a number of years. Obviously, and ever since 2013 when the revised codes came out, we started adjusting and re-looking what we needed to and realign ourselves accordingly. And this is what we've been working towards ever since 2013. Obviously, ever since 2015, we kind of put a lot of emphasis onto this and saw the need to employ a specialist, and this is what we've done. And also, what we've done with that, during 2015, we also engaged a lot of external consultants, and we also kind of took this globally as well. Main thing is obviously to make our global organization know what we have to do locally, and that has been signed off, and that is a process to follow itself. In terms of just the question, I think, of Honorable Horta, the contract termination, and I'm not going to specifically just refer to NELA trading. I think most of our contracts have a national expiry. And when they come to a national expiry, we sort of notify the supplier that that contract has terminated, it's ended its national expiry, and that's the instance when you provide a notice to our subcontractor. But I'll let us answer that question specifically and delve into anything further on this. In terms of creating, I think it was also Honorable Kosa, creating units that e-transform only in 2016, I don't think that's true. I think we've had this on our table ever since I joined Ericsson. And I'm glad to say, Madam Chair, that you mentioned that you are part and parcel of this transformation journey as well. So I think that alone speaks that this journey hasn't been commenced only this year. I think we've continually relook at ways of doing things and doing things better. But not only that, we want to kind of overachieve on what we need to do in South Africa, and not only that, in the region. So just complying to broad-based black economic empowerment in South Africa, I mean, what we're looking at is overachieving of those ambitions, and I think we want to really kind of, look at ourselves and apply this professionally, but not only that, to make sure that we do it in the most diligent and most thorough manner. Sorry.
Thank you. Honorable Kosa was wanting to follow up.
Yes, I'm being disturbed by the fact that because the information I got from here, the first sentence on this page, that the transformation unit established June 2016. So.
Oh, thank you, Honorable Kosa. I think what he meant is that what we did is we appointed a dedicated person just to look after this. What we had previously is, where this was kind of a dual function. But what we're seeing is the need to actually appoint a dedicated person. But not only that, we want to grow that function so that that specifically concentrates not only on South Africa but regionally as well.
Can I also clarify, can I also just elaborate on what my involvement was in Ericsson? A new South Africa had just been born, and the country had become a democratic country where everybody had become a citizen of South Africa, whereas in the past we were not referred to as citizens who had to be consulted when things were happening in our community. That then necessitated that companies understand how communities are structured and how consultation at community level was going to happen. And many companies looked for people who were trained in community development and then had them as part of their transformation agenda to actually find ways of how then the social consultation, a process which involves people who were not part of the system and decision making, was going to happen. So a project was going to be implemented by Ericsson in Guamash, Inlander and Guamar. And if the consultation process had not been followed, Ericsson was not going to come in there to install those homes. So I was then contracted by Ericsson to help Ericsson understand that process. That is transformation, to understand the process of how you then consult with communities. That is different from transformation in terms of opening the space for black people to operate in mainstream economy. That is the question.
Madam Chair, I think that process, I can just verify that it's been kind of spread out within our organization in South Africa. So spread out meaning that it was kind of handled by different people. But what we saw the need is that it needs to be kind of coordinated, so we all coordinated and aligned, and push the agenda in coordinated, cohesive, and aligned fashion, so that we also implement the true spirit and objective for which not only broad-based black economic empowerment, but actually the community that we serve
are also served best. And I think that's what we are trying to achieve in 2016, that it all comes under one umbrella so that we push the agenda more thoroughly and in a cohesive and coherent fashion. And I think that was really the intention. Because we actually had a bit of first joint because it was spread all over the organization. And I think the main thing is to bring it all coordinated and cohesive so that we can push it in a much better manner. Thank you. In terms of I think there was a question on our ownership. Yes, we are 25.01% locally owned. That has been ever since I joined Ericsson. There's been a couple of periods when we had a new shareholder coming in, which had a bit of a break, but otherwise we've always been 25.01% locally owned. Our plan is to move to a 30.01% by end of this year. But not only that, we're looking at moving to a 51% bank-owned market as well. So we are looking at every element of ownership. We don't have any equity equivalent. We are looking at different ways of handling this, and we're also looking at maybe a trust for the benefit of beneficiaries. And this is maybe selecting sort of graduates from universities, providing them bursaries and instruction so that they can also complete their education, but not only that, sort of bring them in-house and upskill them and provide them the competence and exposure in terms of if they select relevant, appropriate kind of degrees or qualifications, then we can push the agenda with them. Obviously, we won't claim that we can recruit these candidates because they are open to the market, but yes, we'll bring them in and kind of impart the necessary exposure and skills more from a corporate perspective. In terms of, I think there was a question from Councillor Chance, strategic decisions at CEO level, and I think what we have is we have a regional... Honorable Chan, sorry, my apologies. Okay, so we have a regional leadership team that operates and manages and sort of makes strategic decisions across the whole region, not only South Africa. But obviously we have kind of local requirements in certain territories, and this is where we need to become more focused and that sort of thing. But we have that process going on. So I don't think it's really any issue in terms of the strategic decision that we need to make, but we've already made those decisions. And those are the decisions that we're executing on at this stage. And I think we made those decisions some time ago, and we've always had that into our strategic policy. If I can just take, I think there was a question on, if you don't mind. Yeah, I think those are mostly the ones that conclude the B side of the broadest economic empowerment side of things. And maybe then I can hand over to Esther Govinda, who can sort of answer and respond to more of the supplier type of thing. Oh, sorry. Yeah, okay. So there was one question which my colleagues reminded me of. And I think it was with whom in I think this was the issue about where we had any DTI kind of equity equivalent or employment equivalent kind of compliance issues, ownership. I don't think we have. We haven't embarked in any equity equivalent program, but we looked at direct ownership.
Are there any more comments from Ericsson?
We'll go through the supply side of things once I'm through.
I'm saying this because we have to round up the meeting. because he was still able to go for lunch and the cafeteria was closed. And there is a house sitting to them.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will definitely not deny anybody from having lunch. I'll keep it very, very short. Some of the salient issues that have come through, one is that why triple BEE? Why are we supportive of triple BEE? We have seen very, very clearly that through the empowerment process that we have now embarked on, more deliberately than ever so before, that it increases the disposable income base of South Africa, if we're talking South Africa in particular. And what does that do? It reduces unemployment within the broader environment. And in addition to that, the affordability for people to then get educated at different skill levels becomes much more accessible. So we've seen that actually transforming itself by ensuring that we look at all the levels of the BEE charter, not just the ownership element exclusively. We also look at looking at what skills development there are, what enterprise development there is, et cetera, et cetera. So every pillar is then looked at. One of the questions that we're also posed, in alignment to that, is how are we then, as Ericsson being a global organization, how are we then transferring and transforming, first of all, Africa as a continent, and then to look at whether there are suppliers that we are now putting onto the much broader global platform. We have started in terms of doing this from a South African perspective, but not only South Africa out, but having to bring certain companies from outside South Africa into our supply mix in South Africa. So the transfer of knowledge, business skills, takes place both ways. But to answer that question, there are 14 South African BEE suppliers, or SMME that we have, that have got a footprint on the African continent. So we try, depending on the scope of work, to then hold these companies with us. We call these regional suppliers, and we are in fact growing them on an ongoing basis. We can certainly share that information with you, and we can show you which skills areas we are continuously developing with them. One example of that is if you look at the tower suppliers. We have tower suppliers and tower manufacturers in South Africa, and they haven't been used extensively. We're now using them to send towers for our requirements outside of South Africa. So they are being manufactured here, and we're now beginning to export some of those towers from South African perspective. The next question was looking at what are we going to be doing in terms of our payment terms. I described this very briefly earlier on, that I now have to, I am busy signing off special payment proposals. Our system cannot accommodate that. So the workaround that we have there is that as we go and identify those particular suppliers that require early payment terms, the workaround would be that I sign off special payment proposals so that earlier payment then takes place. Next was on the red tape. I actually concur with my colleague from Vodacom that it's actually quite difficult for us to use the term red tape, simply because there are different dimensions. One is a regulatory dimension. So there has to be occupational health and safety standards that need to be met. We don't consider that to be red tape. We consider that in the public domain, and that is an absolute necessary. If that necessity is not met, then that's an automatic disqualification, should that be a requirement as we go through the RFP and the selection process. So that is a disqualifying. Should we have existing companies that do not comply with that, we issue them with warnings, we then bring them in and we offer the training, and in that training process we indicate to them as to where they need to improve. We have an occupational health and safety division within our organization, and they focus purely on having to train suppliers where our customers, such as Vodacom in this instance, requires 100% occupational health and safety compliance. We also then train our suppliers on the tools that we use. They are very, very selective tools that are used within the telecommunications company, and also reporting tools, so they get very good training on that. In terms of their compliance, there are code of conduct that we conduct on our suppliers to make sure that they comply with the original scope and the original requirements that they had signed the contracts with. We then advise them as to where the gaps are,
and their action plans for them to close those gaps, and we follow up as our organization, as the sourcing team, we follow up with them that those gaps are in fact closed. Should they require our assistance to close those gaps, we offer that assistance. I think the last point that I want to make sure is that when it comes to, I think the very first point that was made was looking at, how is it possible that we could achieve the SME spend? That is very, very dependent on the number of contracts that are awarded to us in specific countries. So if you look at 2014, the number of contracts that we had with South African customers was very, very limited. So, which means that our demand for our supply base was equally limited. So our spend is actually proportionate very much to how many customers we have in a specific country, and it also depends on what type of services are required. In some instances, you would find that the products that we buy, these are OEM manufactured, and they're not manufactured in South Africa or anywhere else on the African continent. But we are evolving into the process now where we're looking at agency agreements with our original equipment manufacturers so that there is presence and there is a channel, not a channel that is at face value, but it will be a channel that will be a distribution channel where the logistics and the transportation will be handled by companies that are in this South African base, but where we are in the rest of Africa, we're doing that as well. Thank you very much, Chair.
Are we done? Okay. Can you speak up that much? Thank you very much. Thank you for coming and share this information with us. I think that we should thank Nela Trading for approaching this issue in this manner, because it provided all of us seated here with an opportunity to open up and talk about issues. I'm sure that both Vodacom and Ericsson understand now how we think, how Parliament thinks from a small business development perspective. And I think that this is not the last meeting, because from where we sit, we don't think that the country should continue having some people who are just consumers of services. And those are the majority of the population of South Africa. And others are traders. Because we don't want to go to an extreme in terms of changing those situations. When I visit China, I see people who are trading being more Chinese. And when I go to India, I see people who are trading being more Indian. I go to Spain, I see people who are trading being this one. So we can't then live in a country that continues to perpetuate what existed in the past when a black person in this country had no role to play in the mainstream economy. We are in a new South Africa. Black people use and most of them, it is expensive for them because the majority of them are on prepaid. So telecommunication companies should also look at black people as traders within this space as opposed to people as consumers. I sometimes said at the robot traffic light and watch, okay, the indigenous people of this country are carrying classic bread, they are the majority in the shop, meaning that they are still regarded as consumers of goods and services produced somewhere else. When it comes to owning the shop, majority of shops in South Africa, you will find a small amount there in a corner, or people trading on the street, and those who came to South Africa owning tall buildings. And that is what we mean by radical transformation of the economy. To say, indigenous people of this country also need to be given space to participate in mainstream economy. There are those who are classified less, who are not the indigenous people of this country, because they came into this country as slaves to work in sugar cane. In the same way that there are black people who were taken from this country to work in the cotton field. So everything that we do must try to address the results of that, which happened when the country was colonized, so that we can together build a new South Africa. So I'm saying that it is the beginning, because it is this meeting is going to facilitate a situation where we sit around the table and learn from one another and agree on how we're going to move forward to prevent this country from going back to what it was in the past. With all this, I thank you and wish you safe journey back to your offices. Let's continue engaging. Remember, we are not going to get to the third item. What I'm going to ask members to do is to read the minutes, so that in our next meeting, we don't spend time reading the minutes. We come prepared just in. We just adopt the minutes. We don't ask for time to read them. With those, let me thank you all and declare the meeting.
Yeah,